Well, we can, you want, guys, one, we can go ahead and start on the planned action. Yori, as I think most of you are aware, won't be here tonight. Mark actually went home sick, so I'm an army of one over here. Good. Not sure. Hopefully, you guys have had a chance to look at the draft environmental impact statement for our planned action area. I can kind of run through. Basically, for those that were here for the Pioneer Plaza EIS, the environmental impact statements are all structured basically the same way. You start up with a scoping meeting to determine what the salient issues are, be it noise, light, transportation, whatever it might be, or impacts to the environment. In this case, the utilities, water, sewer, storm drainage, and transportation were really highlighted as the biggest issues with the level of commercial development we're talking about in the corridor. So those are the issues that have been worked on most hardly. And, in fact, of those, transportation is the big issue, as I think anyone who really has been watching the progress of Ferndale knows transportation, as we continue to grow, is always going to be an issue. The EIS starts off, there's normally at least three alternatives, one being what's considered a no action, and the other two might be considered action. If this was a subdivision, the no action would be not building the subdivision. In this case, the no action alternative in the EIS for the planned action corridor is assume that none of the large big box retail that has been hinted at came to Ferndale. Let's just say that in that corridor, the city continued to grow somewhat naturally over the next 20 years. What would be the effect? That's the no action. So in essence, if you remember, our transportation impact fees did some assumptions for natural growth over the next 20 years, and that's how we came up with our transportation impact fees. And so Transpo, when they were doing the work for our transportation impact fees, modeled where growth in the city could potentially naturally occur and what sort of improvements would be needed over that 20-year period. That information was pretty much lifted out and put into the EIS as the no-action alternative. So even under the no-action alternative, there is a considerable amount of growth that occurs in the city over the next 20 years and in that corridor. And so in here, it starts off by talking about the level of service. If you remember, we've come up with a corridor level of service that establishes a service level C. So it starts off by coming up with all of the intersections in the area and then expanded outward from that area as to what the existing level of service is. And then it starts off, so that's the no action, is what the existing level of service is now and what the existing level of service is in our comprehensive plan 20 years from now, assuming that all of the projects in the plan, in our transportation impact fees were completed. For this corridor, there's really only one large project that was embedded into our transportation impact fees that is included in the no-action alternative, and that is the widening of the overpass over I-5 to 5 lanes. That was considered necessary just through the natural growth. So we start off with the existing level of service. On the no-action, it's in essence our 20-year.
So the widening is considered. That has to happen regardless.
That has to happen regardless. It truly is a choke point.
Yeah.
So as we, over the next 20 years, and even today, collect transportation impact fees, a small portion of that is mathematically part of that five-lane overpass. So then we have the two levels of development over the no action. And the way we came up with the amount, that is the square footage and mixture, be it retail or hotels or office buildings or residential, how we came up with that mix was we literally sat down with the four property owners and said, what do you plan on doing with your property? And they told us pretty much what they have in mind, which took up a large percentage of the area, especially in the old Pioneer Plaza site, which is a large 100-acre site. Then there was just some baseline assumptions made that, okay, if what happens to the other larger parcels in the city? And there were some estimations of a modest and then a higher level of growth for those other undeveloped parcels. So the upper end is the top end of what the property owners have said they would build, plus what their adjacent properties might build, and then the middle one was pretty much just shuffling back from the top end to find a midpoint. realizing that some development might come in incrementally or in phases, so over time we might not get all the way to the top end. What was done then is for the no action alternative, for the most part, our transportation impact fees did the analysis and came up with the projects that are needed, pretty much the 5-lane overpass. Then Transpo started putting those larger trips into the model to determine what additional transportation improvements could be achieved under the mid or the high growth. And they came back initially with a more traditional intersection traffic light centric. Add a turn lane here, add two turn lanes here, put a traffic light where there isn't one already. The only issue with that when it came to the further end of the development, the high end of the development, is that the level of service started degrading because, as we all are aware, at a traffic light, someone's always stopped. So level of service drops at a traffic light just because no matter what time of day it is or how much traffic is on the road, only one way can be green, the other one has to be red. It's literally an on or off. There's also the greenhouse gas emissions aspects of signalized intersections. EISs are most recently and to a greater degree required to address greenhouse gas emissions. And so realizing that we wanted not the minimum improvements but perhaps the best improvements, we tasked Transpo to look at alternatives to just the traditional turn signals and traffic lights. And they came back with a roundabout-centric aspect for the corridor. What if we put roundabouts in at various locations? What is that? How does that happen? Backing up a little bit, we have our streets, but then we have the freeway. And the freeway is controlled by WSDOT, the State Department of Transportation, because they represent the federal government when it comes to the interstate. WSDOT recently, the past 5 years or so, has started to look at what's worked and what hasn't worked up and down the I-5 corridor. And WSDOT themselves have become very enamored with roundabouts. Anyone who's driven the guide or anywhere else can realize that roundabouts put through a lot more traffic, eliminates greenhouse gas emissions. They do take up more real estate, but they operate 24 hours a day, rain or shine, power on, power off. It doesn't matter. They're actually very good at putting traffic through without increasing delay. And also, and I know all of you have heard this before, roundabouts severely reduce the amount of traffic fatalities to the point where they're almost non-existent. There are more just fender, just little scrapings. Study after study after study have shown that the severity and the frequency of accidents in roundabouts are dramatically less, somewhere like 60, 70, 80% less worldwide when it comes to roundabouts versus signalized intersections.
So it sounds like the argument's over that roundabouts as kind of scary as they were when we first were trying to, my heart still gets a little,
Well, there's, and
it's one of the arguments.
The only place that roundabouts don't work is at 3 o'clock.
Yeah. I mean,
when those people, that's because they're overloaded.
There's a limit.
Come down and they're nose to tail and they will not give anybody
a. Yeah, it's still better than it was.
Yeah. There is a physical limit.
Better than what?
There are two things that change roundabouts for the better. One is, years ago, it used to be that if you were coming into the roundabout, you had the right of way. So the cars in the roundabout had to stop. Now it's the opposite. Because what that did was it gridlocked the roundabout. The cars in the roundabout stopped. The cars came in and stopped. And everyone was just stopped.
Although some people still do that.
They still do that.
It's just like the freeway.
So worldwide, when they changed over to yield that the people in the roundabout have the right-of-way, that allowed for the roundabout itself to flow.
The one that cracks me up is watching the Tour de France Saturday, and I'm watching the Tour de France. They're going somewhere just on the outskirts of the Pyrenees. And there's this monstrous roundabout, and all the pipers are flying through this. I'm going, they have traffic lights on all the entrances of the roundabout.
Yes. Really? Some of them get so big that they actually have.
Yeah, so I've seen them on the East Coast. I've seen them with traffic lights in the roundabout.
In the roundabout, yeah.
like complete regular green, or more like slow down.
How do you coordinate? If you have three or four entrances or roundabouts, is it going sequence?
I guess. I don't know.
I was thinking about that, too. Because
for the bike races, it was closed. Yeah. The bikes were just flying through
there. See how regularly
operate. But it was hilarious, because here's the big flashy red lights on the roundabouts.
In eastern Pennsylvania, they have two main thoroughfares that come in, and those are traffic lighted and in sequence with the main the main two entrances are in sequence with the lights that are actually in the roundabout.
Mm-hmm.
You get stopped in the roundabout to allow the main entrances to come in.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So, but that's only for the four lane, the really huge roundabout
that was built probably 60 years ago.
In fact,
when
I was watching the Tour de France this weekend, I actually stopped it and rewound it. Look, I learned something about roundabouts. And these are for very large roundabouts. The issue is pedestrian. And this was a three-lane roundabout. And the way they worked over there, they have a lot more bicycles. But the same thing worked with pedestrians. Because how do you get pedestrians across a three-lane roundabout? Well, the way they did it was they had the pedestrians come up, over, and then come down into the roundabout.
Like
they walked across a little bridge, and then they walked across the roundabout and then came up and over. So they used the roundabout itself as the pedestrian crossing. So that way the pedestrian crossing wasn't outside of the roundabout conflicting with cars coming in and out. It was actually brilliant. But anyway.
So they really do have less accidents?
Oh, considerably.
I understand the severity part of it. That part makes sense. But it surprises me to hear there's less number of accidents.
Less number, and people don't die in roundabouts anymore.
Right, severity,
you don't
get
T-bone.
I get that.
And there's less, because you're going 25 miles an hour.
Or less.
People are more defensive going to roundabouts because they're more wary of them.
Yeah, the only two accidents I've seen in roundabouts were down there on Curvada, and they were both rear-enders.
Yeah.
Somebody that doesn't know how to work their roundabout stops.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They just don't watch.
Well, we're going
and traffic is only coming from one direction.
From the inside to the outside.
Yeah, two things. When I was in Sweden back in the early 90s, that's when I first saw traffic lights on roundabouts there, and it kind of threw me.
Mm-hmm.
But it was to regulate the going into the roundabout, because you had a main drag and then the side ones that weren't as popular, and it was all based off the sensors in the ground.
Exactly.
Like an on-ramp.
Demand control.
Yeah,
exactly.
Meter. Access. But the other thing I was wondering, in the roundabout drawings that you showed the other day at committee,
mm-hmm.
were there any of those bypass, I guess you call them bypass lanes or something like they did there at Northwest and I-5?
Yeah,
where you can,
it's called a slip lane, is where you don't actually go into the roundabout. If you want to take a right, you simply go over here, and you don't even get into the roundabout. The roundabouts, and this is what Brent was talking about, this was done for illustration purposes. It's to scale from the standpoint that a 200-foot roundabout is 200 feet. But where it is, because they literally just plopped them down. And this lacked a more detailed roundabout analysis to find out where slip lanes can work and where they can't. So we need to refine
it. Right, because you need one going like Maine to LaBounty or something like that.
John, you had a question?
Yeah, so generally, are they more expensive than a four-way, and is it because there's more land involved?
They're more expensive because there's more land involved. The life cycle cost for the city, though, is less, because you don't have a traffic light to have to monitor, not only for sequencing, but then maintenance. And there's other aspects around about that. There's life cycle costs are usually you get a better level of service over a longer period of time.
And the city put a latte place right in the middle, so people could actually buy lattes as they're going around, and we get generations.
That's right.
Like a
city-owned latte stand.
So since DOT has really become enamored with roundabouts, and since we don't control the on-off ramps, we realize that in order to have the plan action ordinance work, because once we get done with the plan action EIS, which might, and this is just a draft, we'll come back with a final, and right now there's a very roundabout-centric solution in here. We are going to fold in a traffic light-centric solution just because the developers want us to do it as an option. So in the EIS, you can have one, two, three, four options to solve the same issue. But when we get to the plan action ordinance, the actual ordinance, you can only have one solution. So in the ordinance, we'll have to have a spreadsheet in there that says, for this level of impact, that is this many vehicle trips,
you need to do this at this intersection, this at this intersection, this at this, just straight out what you have, you know, no options. This is what the city has determined to be the best option. So while we talk about various ways to kind of skin the same cat, in the ordinance at the end here in December, we'll need to come up with it with a definitive. We might come up with a situation where if development is slow and steady, we might allow for interim, add a turn lane, do this. And then when we get more vehicle trips at some point, we could say at a lower level, you put in a turn lane, but you buy the right-of-way for a roundabout. And then as the city continues to grow at some point, we might move over, we take out the traffic light and put in a roundabout or something like that. There's variations off that theme.
Can you pick and choose? So you, and I don't know what would be the right way, but, you know, east of the freeway, we're going to do roundabouts. And west of the freeway, we're going to do traffic
right.
lights.
This is the issue. As you know, we have level service C in our corridor.
Yes.
DOT has service level D on the interstate. But there are many, if not most or all, depending on how far south you drive towards Seattle, intersections that do not operate at D. They operate at E, they operate at F. What ends up happening is that DOT, not wanting to stop development, simply slides their level of service. But they're now realizing the problem that is causing. So what they're doing now is they're trying to identify up front with the municipalities that if you can, this is what we would like. So we need DOT to buy off on the planned action EIS, because when we get done with the EIS and we actually adopt the planned action ordinance, when a development comes in, DOT or anyone else won't have a chance to appeal it through SEPA. SEPA's done. That's the purpose of the planned action. You do the SEPA up front. So later on, if a big box store comes in and someone wants to appeal their traffic, it's too late. Now, DOT realizes that. They realize that this is their time to bite at the apple. They're not going to bite at it later. So through our conversations, we start off with Transport doing the very traditional traffic signals. We talked to DOT, and DOT said, wait a minute, this is our only bite at the apple. We would like you, and to be honest, I actually wanted to look at the roundabout aspect as well, because I was interested in the best possible long-term level of service, not perhaps the cheapest and fastest and easiest. So we then had Transco go back and look at the roundabout section and put the roundabouts in here, because they did give us a better level of service over a longer period of time. But we'll probably include the traffic signals later on in response to the comments that I expect that we'll get from the developers.
So wait, my question was, can you do roundabouts in one area and traffic lights in the other? Because I know you have to have, if you're doing roundabouts, obviously if you're kind of all down the line, the point is that they flow.
So yes, and this leads into the fact that if DOT wants to have roundabouts at the intersections with the freeway, we found fairly quickly in the model that to mix roundabouts and traffic lights in the same corridor is very problematic, because
right, which is why I didn't know, because
you end up
west. I don't know.
Because you end up with a slug of cars once a light turns green that overwhelms the roundabout and backs it up to the traffic light. If you don't have great separation.
So you're really going all the way back. It's hard to make that decision.
This is the problem.
Okay.
Probably not too distant in the future. But this is in Washington. If you buy an outdoor house, we're going to realign that intersection. And our choice is going to be, what are we going to put? And we've already discussed if we put a roundabout there, the church is going to go away.
No.
We could squeeze in.
You may have to buy more houses.
It might buy another, yeah, exactly.
Is there anything we can do with the decisions that we make for this to get money from DOT? Like, it would affect the on-ramp, off-ramp so much due to the decisions we made?
Yeah, one of the, there were really two things that, two things that DOT told us. One was they prefer a roundabout solution because it gives better level service. And the second thing is, no matter what you decide on, we, DOT, have no money. So don't look to us for anything.
Okay. And I know I always hear they don't, but I didn't know if
and then they added,
tell you what you can.
And then they added, if we, they added at the end of the conversation, you know, if we get more money in the future, Ferndale's pretty far down on the I-5 list for DOT projects.
And none of the decisions we make on this would help to move us up?
It helps, but we might move up from, you know, 107th to 103rd. You know, I mean,
okay.
They have a lot
bigger problems.
It's so hard. I wouldn't want to do stuff that's going to make the interchange off-ramp and on-ramp so much worse that it's, you know, an issue for everybody else here.
Now,
just
now,
so we can,
DOT did say that they're willing to work with us when it comes to the to the permitting for this, because there's a process, as you know, that we need to go through no matter what solution we do to that anything that affects the interchange ramps. There's a process. They were really good at Second and Portal for our roundabout there. They ran it through the federal process very quickly, and so we were appreciative of that. So they said that they'll work with us to expedite it, and they're also willing to use DOT right of way to help us. So if we need roundabouts there, if we have some right of way and DOT has some right of way, and the developers can either donate or buy some right of way, we can kind of cobble together the land space for that. So they've been very cooperative about that.
But my concern with it, looking at it, is where are we going to get all those right of way? And doesn't this have to be kind of preliminarily engineered? If we're going to tell Mr. Big Box at Pioneer Plaza, you know, you're going to have to put in a roundabout at Barrett. Well, don't we have to have a game plan of what he has to buy or do?
Figure it out.
Exactly. Part of it is we'll engineer it from a functional standpoint. When it actually comes down to, you know, the real engineering on the ground, that's something that's going to happen at the time of development, because you don't know who's going to develop, whether they need to put in a single or a double lane or what it might be. That's why I mentioned that one of the strategies we may use is if Big Box number one comes in and they're not so large to trigger all of these improvements, we might be able to say to them that, yes, you could probably, you yourself could probably get by with adding a turn lane or changing a traffic light, but that's not what the city wants. We want to go a little bit above that. There's a couple ways we can do that, and these are some of the strategies we're going to be working with Transfo on. It could be that we can, you of course, use developer reimbursement agreements where, you know, you put in the intersection and then for the next 10 or 15 years, As other people locate around, they'll repay you, Mr. Developer. We do all those all the time, which is a great way to do it, but it also places a little risk on the side of the developer, because what if people just sit there and wait 10 years, and they all said it's 10 years in one day, and they go, ha-ha, I can now come in, and I don't have to pay you anything. I think the way retailers work, they aren't quite that calculating, and to wait 10 years in one day seems kind of silly, but it's a possibility. The other way is for the city to actually participate with these developers, and that is if the developers are going to bring in, supposedly I've heard that what Walmart and Costco in Bellingham, each of them bring in about $1.5 million to the city of Bellingham. So if we get that scale of development in the city, we should expect $1 million, $1.5 million annually in sales tax. It probably won't be that far of a stretch for the developer to say, you know, this is going to cost me $4 million instead of $1 million. You're getting $1.5 million a year. Would you, the city, be willing to, over a certain period of time, kick some of the sales tax back to us so we can recoup our investment over a 5-year, 10-year?
That's kind of where Burton's going to play,
that's
right?
Exactly. And that's what the city of Marysville did. They have an ordinance on the books that helped the large retailers come to Smoky Point. And the way Marysville diced it up was you sign up for the program. If you generate at least $200,000, that's the number they picked. If you generate at least $200,000 a year for 3 years after you do your development, the city will then give you back half of your traffic impact. And that's just one way to do it. That doesn't have to be, but for whatever reasons, that's the model that they chose to do. I don't know what those numbers are. What they really did was you're supposed to take the traffic impact fees and you put them into a little account, so at the end of 3 years, they get it back plus interest. The city can spend their half, but the other half is supposed to set aside.
How is that not a gift of funds?
Public funds.
Because you're actually paying for the improvements you got over and above what was minimally required. So it's almost like a developer reimbursement, but the city is on the reimbursement side. Instead of another business coming in and started generating profit and giving to latecomers, we're generating the profit, so to speak, through sales tax and give it back.
Well, you signed the contract in advance, so everyone knows the participation by your
Right.
Like other options.
And one of the things that BERT will help us with is, and this came up during our meeting with the property owners and their attorneys. They were trying to get, the property owners and the attorneys were trying to get a sense of what's the mood in Ferndale. How bad do we want big box retail? Do we have a budget hole that we're trying to plug? Do we have unmet needs that that we have? And that's one of the things, if you look through the BERT proposal, BERT will sit down and talk with us. What are our needs? What are our values? So basically to gauge that temperature, how comfortable and at what level might we feel good about the idea that we're getting this inflow? Yes, we'll have more police. Yes, there'll be more aid calls. Yes, there may be, you know, impacts on the traffic. There might even be more people coming to our parks. I mean, there's a lot of things, and they'll be traveling our other roads, so there's a lot more needs for maintenance. So, you know, what will be our direct needs that could conceivably be taken off the top before we talk about any surplus, to use maybe a loose word, that we might consider partnering with the developers on? Because one of the things that the developers have asked us is, you have a five-lane overpass on the freeway that you say you need, whether we come or not, over the next 20 years. How are you going to pay for that, city? And our answer was, well, if we collect all of our impact fees in 20 years, which is probably 10 or 15 years past the point when we might need the overpass, we might have enough money to do it. But so
we need another planned answer to give them that.
Yeah. But I mean, because they ask, you know, how much money do you have? And our answer is, well, we don't have much at all. But obviously, if they come in, their impacts will be so immediate that instead of having a 5, 10, 15-year ramp up to the need for the overpass, we could have a 2 or 3 year need for that overpass just because of the intensity of the development. So to pay for it, we may be entering into some hybrid where perhaps the developer puts in the minimum and the city picks up the difference between the minimum and the roundabout cost. So let's say if it's $1 million for an intersection and it's $2 million for roundabout, maybe we're on the hook for that extra million and we'll pay it out over the next 5, 10 years. Maybe that's the structure that we're comfortable with. Maybe we rely just on developer reimbursements and say, hey, if you and you guys come, everyone else is going to come, and so, you know, don't worry, be happy. Or there might be some other in-between things that we might do. But that all is going to happen between the draft and the final, and between the final and the ordinance. But right now, we have a 30-day comment period for the draft EIS. And then after that, we'll start responding to the comments made. And the hope is that I believe it's like September or October, probably October, for the final to come out. And then we'll start working on the ordinance itself, which will probably bring us up right to the end of the year, right to December.
So is there a time frame you have from when the final comes out and when you have to have the, or like, is there a 90-day or any kind of limit when the ordinance has to come out?
Yes, there is. And I don't remember what it is. It's pretty loose. It's like, I think it's within 12 months, but no more than 24. Yeah, it's a pretty wide margin between it, because it allows you to take the final and then, again, assess the local needs and desires and come
what
up with the ordinance.
What point would you see some more specific developer interest after the ordinance comes out? After the final comes out?
Well, we certainly have developer interest right now.
I know there's
rumors
and people chewing at the bib.
They pay 50 grand each.
And then,
true,
you know, they pay 50.
Yeah, I guess you could say
and
that.
And we're also getting a lot more interest down at Slater.
Okay.
And that might be, because you never know exactly who you're dealing with, this might be the same people who
right.
just want to have a plan B because the improvements at Slater might
and
be
And you still wouldn't
less,
know who it is
or it might
until
be new.
It's way down the line anyway, right?
Exactly. I mean, there are only so many, maybe, I don't know, 10
potential,
or so.
Right.
Big box retailers in the world, so I mean there can only be so many out there. Yeah.
What happens with concurrency? Is that addressed in any of the EIS?
There's two things. One is concurrency, and one is level of service. The property owners, as you know, we have level of service D. I'll get to concurrency in a second. We have level of service C right now.
Okay.
They wanted us to put in here, well, what would the improvements be with level of service D? And my answer was, well, let's put in B, too. And that, of course, didn't go over as well as it did right now. But I told him, I go, C is what we have. Because the D work is going to be in the appendix of the final. And what really happens is that it doesn't really change at the upper end. It doesn't really change if you have C or D. It's just a question of when you hit it. What level of development triggers, let's say, a double roundabout versus a single roundabout. With D, it just triggers it a little bit later. But when you talk about the full top end of development, your D, the improvements are pretty much the same, either C or D. Getting to concurrency. As you know, right now, we have immediate concurrency. When you open your doors, all of the traffic improvements have to be built. We may, again, during this final to the ordinance phase, come back with, and this is something that perhaps Burke or others could help us with, could we, the city, be comfortable with non-immediate concurrency for a window of time? Could we, the city, be comfortable with service level D or worse during the construction period leading up to maybe a year or so, 6 months, whatever it might be, after they open their doors? Those are the kind of value judgments that, you know, this body here and our citizens are going to need to weigh in on. Because it could be that we might need to package not only some innovative developer partnerships, but also some relaxation of the level of service and concurrency to enable all this to come to a certain point, so we're back to concurrency and we're back to a level of service.
Can that concurrency be done just for this area?
Yes.
And the immediate
and phase? Level of service. We can because we have this planned action ordinance area, we can adopt a different concurrency level, even a different level of service level, for whatever time periods we want, if we wish.
Doesn't the level of service always kind of drop when it's construction time? I mean, I wouldn't think you'd have to put in an ordinance. It's okay for the level of...
I don't think
we used to do this. Right. But I think anytime there's construction, it's understandable that right. Your level of service is going to drop.
What it might be is what if the store will be ready to be opened 4 months before the traffic improvements are finished? So the store will be open, but they're still doing construction. So... Right now they have to be done at the same time. We might be able to say, okay, you can, because the store might be quicker and easier to build, or might not be.
I think, I don't know, this is my opinion, but I feel personally that this council is going to change its mind on that.
I think it's not as feasible as we would have hoped it would be.
Absolutely. I mean, immediate concurrency and level service C, or even B, I mean, those are great. But practically speaking, I agree, because the property owners have asked this very question. What's the mood of the council? Would the council be willing to look at a lower level of service? Would they be willing to look at a relaxed concurrency? Would they be willing to look at a financial partnership arrangement? And I told them that yes, yes, and yes, but the city council does have certain values and ideals that they see for the city, because I've told them this probably a couple times. I go, if at the end of the day all we have is more traffic,
no one's going to need for that.
And we don't come out ahead in this. In fact, if we come out with perhaps a few more dollars in our pocket but worse traffic, that is not something that politically jibes with what we've been hearing and we've been talking about over the last year, 2 years, 3 years.
I think with, if we're talking about roundabouts and right-of-way acquisition and redoing on-ramps and getting new right-of-ways and stuff for that, there's no way you could have immediate concurrency, because a Walmart's going to go over to their shelf and say, gee, I got one, two, we'll use this for, and they got right. Most of their drawings are already done.
Yeah. No,
and things. So, as far as they're throwing up a building, they can throw it up relatively quickly. But if you're talking about you got to build your building and then build a two-lane roundabout with new on-ramps and off-ramps to the freeway, there's no way that those can happen.
Yeah, I would assume that the Walmarts and the Costcos and the Sam Clubs of the world know within a couple of days how long it takes to build one, because they do them all the time.
Yeah.
But, yes, it's many
like
Sonics times
when they came in, they use the same
right
thing.
And because we need to get the acquiescence of DOT, and because that's a process, it could very well be that in itself, that approval process from WSDOT,
will throw off the timing between when the building's going to be done and when the roundabouts can be constructed, because we might literally have to wait 8 months for DOT to go, yeah, build it. In the meantime, they're building the store. So there's a lot of factors, including WASDOT, that will probably lead us to some modification of our level of service, concurrency, and financial contributions to make this whole thing work.
Don't you think that it would be wise of us, from a prudent standpoint, to start thinking about what we'd be willing to accept now? Should we wait until this final EIS comes out?
No. In fact, that was really the reason for that's why we thought that now is the time. Now that the draft is out there, now that you may be hearing from either the property owners or citizens who love this or citizens who hate this or folks from Bellingham that want to convince you for various parochial reasons not to do it.
Really soon.
Yes.
I mean, I'd like to go down a path where we'd say, yeah, concurrency, 18 months.
Or 2 months. Or whatever.
Yeah, something. Yeah. In fact, if you remember.
You're allowed 6 by state law.
6 yeah. Secured by state law. But if we say concurrency, yeah, we'll slide it to 18 months or 24 months or whatever. Mm-hmm. And level of service during construction is what it is.
Right.
Because that's the way construction is.
Yeah.
And it's like you said, it can't.
If you remember, concurrency has been on the future agenda for a while, but we've been kind of sliding it back because we originally had it on there when we were just talking about transportation impact fees, and that seemed to be the next thing to talk about. But then came along the plan action. And so we said, let's have the plan action inform the conversation on concurrency. It could be we could even play off relaxation of concurrency, relaxation of level of service with exactly how much financial contribution we have. So we might be able to kind of. No, they're still on board.
Because if they are, I'd like to see them at least at the committee level for a couple of the committees come to a committee meeting and tell us, okay, how long does it take to build a project like this? What are we looking at?
So you have an idea how long it's going to last.
If you're going to build around about here and around about here, and you start, April 1st, when are they done?
Mm-hmm. Well, as we saw from the portal roundabout, it's a construction season. It's the summer, but again, what probably will take what will take longer is that DOT lead time when it comes to the interchanges. Or what might take time if we're not talking about the interchanges is right of way acquisition, because if you look on here, the roundabout theoretically at La Bounty in Maine. Could probably fit in the right-of-way we have with some addition. Down here in front of Walgreens, it won't fit in the right-of-way we have, but we do have an empty parcel on one of the four corners, so there's some possibilities there. If you look over at Nordic, it won't fit in the existing right-of-way, but there's an empty parcel on one of the four corners. So there is some opportunities to get right-of-way that doesn't have a building on it. The biggest issue, and we really haven't hit upon this, is the northbound off-ramp at I-5. This thing is a bugger to try to figure out from a transportation. We have thrown out probably 10 or 15 alternatives, all of which, I guess to use the technical term, suck. I mean, it's just hard because the damn off-ramp is, if the off-ramp was over, if it was a traditional diamond interchange, roundabouts would work well. You can do the double diverging interchange, that the one where you cross over and mess up everybody. There's a lot of alternatives. This over here is going to be expensive because any way you do it, you need right of way to either reroute the off ramp, Barrett, the frontage road, and there is property. We do have some empty land there.
We own it.
We own some of the empty land, that little triangle.
Because it might be that we bring the off-ramp, the northbound off-ramp, 262, three-quarters of a mile back down the road and come over.
That's one of the possibilities.
Just,
it serves Amarillo,
to fly, yeah. either fly it over Barrett or have Barrett sink down under it. And there's a lot. It's one of those things like years ago told me that, you know, there's no solution known to man that money won't solve. But there's even a limit to that, realistically.
I was going to say real quick, I understand the direction of going, of not having the immediate concurrency or at least, you know, putting it out for 18 months, 2 years, whatever it might be. I was one of the ones who really pushed the level of service D, and I would hope that, you know, this council and future council doesn't back down on that. So I'm really nervous to see people decide, well, you know, the developers aren't happy with this. But, okay, D is fine. And then before you know it, we have Bakerview out here. You know, I just think if you don't keep those standards up high for the sake of the current citizens, you're going to just be letting them down.
Yeah, you will hear, because we heard it at the meeting with the property news, you will hear from either their engineers or some of their minions that nobody has C.
I don't care.
And my answer is, show me a freeway interchange in the state of Washington in an urban area with large retail that works. And they couldn't. I go, yeah, no one has it, but I don't want what everyone else has, which is lousy.
I hope you guys keep with that.
One of the interesting things that we get is a year ago we had a traffic jam on Main Street. When you got off the freeway, this is before Second Street opened. You got off the freeway and you got onto Main Street coming into town. You were backed up at the Labounty Light. You were backed up at the bridge. You were backed up over the bridge. And sometimes you would wait two or three lights to get completely through all of that mess. Not a lot of time involved, 6, 7, 8 minutes maybe. I drove it today at 4:30. Three cars, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if you ask Joe Blow Citizen out there, what's one of the really severe problems that Ferndale has? They'll tell you, traffic in downtown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's not there. It's just gone.
Now, all of this development
is gone. It's not gone. It diverted.
It got
diverted, and it's in a much better. I don't know if you took a level of service look at it out there right now. It certainly is a C or better today because of what's happened over on Second Street.
There's still time for the day. I mean, when I came here, I come from over there. I come from, you know, the other side of the freeway, and I still had to wait a little while. Not as bad. I mean, I remember there were times where I thought you'd wait for several lights.
That much later because I went over to
me,
one.
You know, coming up.
I was right behind you today.
Yeah,
actually,
coming home. The change in the signalization at the freeway that WashDOT did has made a big difference.
Yes.
But the problem is first, second, third, and fourth. Because I don't know how many times I've come in here where I'm sitting at second. The light is green at second, but its light is red at third, and there's no place.
My point is this. There has been a dramatic improvement at Second Street over. All you have to do is watch it. There's been a dramatic improvement. Yet, the people still think there's a huge problem.
I think it would be improved even more so if we could someday work a partnership out with Washington County and do an intersection improvement to signalize him off and Slater. And I come in that way all the time.
Yeah. That guy was
so fast. You come off on Slater, you zip down to Hemhoff, you come right up, you're up to Douglas, and you're up the hill. And you miss all of downtown. It's just a natural way for me to come into town.
Over the weekend, I was thinking about something. I kind of thought this is that it could very well be that when the big box stores start locating in this area and when we start doing the construction and building all the freeway interchange or the other roundabouts, that might give us a much better reason to consider the Thornton flyover down to Second. And if the big box stores come to town, we'll have new cash flow to service the debt on that type of thing. And what I was thinking is, I don't know if this will work or not, but years ago when I worked for the city of Ocean Shores, they wanted to build a convention center. And they didn't have the money to build a convention center, but they knew that they were going to be getting substantial hotel motel taxes once a convention center was built because all these people would be coming to Ocean Shores for conventions. So the conundrum was, we said, well, how do we they didn't have any councilmatic debt, or at least not enough councilmatic debt room. They said, how do we issue debt without having a dedicated revenue source? And the way it was sold, and I don't know if it'll work here, was we convinced the voters to approve a voter-approved levy, a bond. But we pledged, we said, vote for it, which then goes on your taxes, but we won't put it on your taxes. We pledge that for the life of this, we will take the new hotel motel revenues.
That's a huge one.
And they believed us, and they approved it, and it's never been on the property tax, and it's now been paid off. They used the hotel motel revenues to pay it off, but the vehicle was a voter approved bond. Now, whether you, if we could swing something like that,
how much do you think
the size of basketballs?
But assuming we don't have the councilmatic, room for that, that's a way to do it because we'll have another cash flow. But that might be another thing that we might want to figure into that whole matrix of we off the top of our new sales tax, we need so much for cops, we need so much for more EMS.
I still think
EMS.
The voters would approve paying themselves, passing something for a Thornton flyover. I think there's so many people here that feel that that would be just the answer to all traffic issues. They'd be going
to imagine 3, 4, 5, 6 big boxes, and then you go to Thornton.
Yeah.
Oh.
I know the Greeks, but Mark's not here, but you've got enough experience. We get, let's say we get the big two, 1.5 million each. So $3 million a year. That's what they're getting currently out of their current stores. And they're not planning on building their current stores here.
No.
They're planning on building the superstores. So if you bump that to 3.5 between the two, would we not be better off served to take that money first
X years?
Pay off our debt service that we're dealing with right now to free up some councilmatic bonds.
That will take an extremely mature council because all of a sudden when you see that, there'll be lots of hands up going, we should spend this on it. We should spend this on it.
Right.
Money very if you feel we're going, Parks Director!
But all will be in with a PowerPoint presentation of streets and sewers.
The bond. Could we do that?
No.
Legally?
Well, the problem is, if you remember back when we were talking about it, these bonds are non-callable for the first 10 years because of that very reason. People don't want to invest in a 1, 3, 5, 8, 10-year bond and then get paid back in 1, 3, 5, 8 years.
Maybe some of the older stuff you could pay off.
But we don't have that much bond. We have City Hall, which pays off next year.
Yeah. Oh.
And besides that, that's all we have for Councilmatic. We have water sewer debt, but that's
one of the other issues we have around that is you can bet your bottom dollar that both of those big box people are going to know full well. You mentioned this earlier. They're going to know how much revenue the city's taking in. And they're going to want a part of that revenue to help them pay their infrastructure costs. They're going to say, look, if you're going to benefit by my store from $1.5 million a year, how about $500,000 a year for the next 10 years into the infrastructure costs that we have to outlay? Because your choice is to say, no, I don't want to do that, and we should decide not to come.
And we have Europe, which is the whole thing with FERC. That's how they'll be able to help us balance out the cost that we're going to have for more police and more, whatever.
Now, I mentioned that we're having some more interest out of Slater. We actually had a group come in from California mall developers who came in. And not that they love Ferndale, but they're running out of land in California to build stores. So they're looking other places. And I asked them this. I go, in fact, they actually drove up from Seattle. There is not that much from Seattle north, and for that matter, probably Mexico border north, there's not that much developable, because there's like down in Arlington or what have you like that. There's freeway frontage there, but it's outside of UGA. You can't develop it right around there. So there's not much within a UGA, within a city limit, freeway frontage from Mexico to Canada left. There's not. We are getting to be one of the last games in town, and perhaps more importantly, not that Ferndale is important, the Whatcom County, Canadian, Bellingham market is important. That's the market, is Canadians and Whatcom County, Bellingham.
You've had a few people, I think, who've traveled outside of this area. I've had friends who traveled outside of this area have gone shopping at Target down in, wherever, down in Oregon or something, and talk about how dang empty it is, you know, and you just don't, you really, makes you realize even more how much we're getting.
I mean, look at the outlet mall at Quilceta. I mean, it's you know, it's jammed with Canadian plates, and for that matter, even Costco just,
I can't believe that. They take tour buses from Canada.
As long as that dollar is working for them, otherwise.
Shopping is fun.
Jump in, John.
I'm enjoying this conversation a lot. I appreciate all the questions, but I think that that last point, Greg, is the reason we need to get the standards high here. Even if it delays things, I just think, I agree, I think we're a very unique location. This is special.
It is.
You know, 20 minutes to the border or less, I mean, this is a beautiful spot. And I think we, this sense of discipline that I hear from council, I support. Let's not just, you know, gosh, if we don't do this, we're not going to get them. Maybe we won't get them this year, but we're going to get them.
I'd like to throw a little wrinkle, though. I mean, there's no, I guess it's, I don't mind making it public. I mean, anyone can buy that land, and that means that it doesn't have to be the city of Ferndale. It doesn't have to be the developer. You still have that thing that the nation would like to buy more land around a freeway interchange. That's something you better think about.
Yeah, because in fact, the biggest impetus for Marysville to put together their traffic impact rebate program was Quilceta Village. In fact, in the ordinance, it says it. It says that Marysville was at a competitive disadvantage with Quilceta Village and the Tulalips across the freeway. That was one. Now, they're a little different situation than the Lummies. I mean, you know, the Tulalips own hundreds and thousands of acres right on the freeway. They already built the casino. They already put in the Home Depot. It was a much bigger, you know, they were the 800-pound gorilla. But the fact remains that there's no reason why the tribe can't reach out. It's just something that we need to consider. But I agree. I don't want this to be a race to the bottom.
Yep. Can we have a break?
Yeah, sure.
Our question, Greg.
6-minute break.
Who paid for the roundabout at Northwest and the I-5?
I don't know. I'll find out. I know Reichert Hebe designed it, so I can find out from them.
Was it
City paid for it?
City paid for it?
That's a city project, I believe.
All city? Do they have any DOT money?
All city.
Yeah. Might have some grants.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, it wasn't all
maybe some TIB grants. Or.
Yeah,
hi.
And
you didn't think we could.
What's that?
You didn't think
we could
do
this.
Ashamed.
Okay.
I just
like after consent or something. Okay. Yeah.
So you're gonna have to monitor us from afar.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Checking in.
Well, you're not gonna be gone forever.
Have you
heard
from
3 years? I'll come back. I'll come back just in time to start campaigning. So this is it.
Can't believe how fast.
I know. Well, you know, I can look at my kids. I remember starting on the council here, and I was pregnant when I started. You know,
I remember the interview when you were pregnant at the Herald.
Yeah, I got pregnant. Let me see. So I was, like, barely pregnant. So Cameron was born in September, which means September, October. I would have gotten pregnant, like, a couple weeks before I took oaths.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah. No, that's not right. Act of God, medicine, you know, surgeries fail, but yeah, no, but yes, like I was barely pregnant when I took oath and took office, and I look at Cameron and he's, you know, almost 3, so it's like, wow, yeah, so yeah, no, everything does go by.
It does.
Pretty
it
for that.
I tried calling you just before.
Yeah.
I was in class last 2 days.
Used to be over the counter, no,
taking a kinesiology class.
Someone
gave me cookies. That's good.
Connie.
I didn't get them making cookies, so I brought them.
I don't see why. You got nothing going on.
I know. I was like, I can't even find time to do that. But my movers come in, like, I don't know, 3 days, and I'm looking around like,
where are you going to live?
Lake
Augusta.
So, yeah, for 10 days. We fly out 2 weeks from today. I guess they're going to like the pool. Yeah, you know, I looked around and had a couple different options. The government gives you like this. I needed a suite. I'm going to be there for 10 days, 4 of us. There's no way I can leave. So I tried Best Westerns. I'm not Best Western. I'm Super 8. So I was like, it's so cool. I met wife in the same neighborhood. They didn't have one available, so like the time that I needed. Came in half suite. And then
your house is rented out.
Yeah, it's rented starting on the trip. And then I tried out of Silver Reef, but they couldn't come down low enough to, you know, the limit that the government gave me here. And then they came in today. I'm going to have a lot to work with. But the lowest they could bring me down for a suite Silver Reef was like $229. And I was like, I'm not making up the difference of $30 a night, you know. So I got a good rate at the Best Western, and I wanted to have a pool, and you know. But the biggest thing was having, I needed to have the suite. With having staying for that long with three kids.
Right across the street from Arnie Hanna.
What'd you say?
Right across the street from Arnie Hanna.
Well, I've got a pool there. There's a pool and a hot tub there at the Best Western, and they've got coffees. And,
One minute.
And there's a market that opened up right over there by Fred Meyer, and so there's. And I'm right off the freeway there. You're welcome.
Yeah. The coffee has good food. I ate there when I worked
there.
I don't eat
there much, but their drinks are good. So, and they deliver to the room.
So where are you staying in New York?
We're going to be out on Long Island. I've got family out there.
Staying in a sauna?
Easing my way.
I know Ryan posted yesterday.
I don't know how he phrased it, but basically it's 111 degrees today. You know, thank God for air conditioning. So,
Go back there. Don't walk back there. You don't have time.
And that's what we say whenever we're out there. We're working on, I'm going to go see Wicked with my daughter. And my mom is going to take Alexander to see Spider-Man, but she has interest in seeing. I've heard it's not a great movie. And he might like Wicked.
So he's driving around looking at you.
But, yeah.
Oh, yeah, good.
Oh, jeez. Okay.
Yeah.
Mr. Clerk!
But we did take the Andrew. Absolutely love
it. Yeah, I think that's kind of what I've taken them before with me. You know, yeah, like things in our paper, you know, whatever. That's right.
Thank you. You may be seated. Okay, our clerk will now take the roll call.
Councilmember Hanson.
Here.
Councilmember Feria.
Here.
Councilmember Ingram.
Here.
Councilmember Lutton.
Here.
Councilmember Zimmerman.
Here.
Councilmember Goodrich.
Here. Councilperson Malpezzi is stuck in Washington, D.C. on a flight problem, and he's asked to be excused.
I want
to
move for an excuse, please.
Second.
Okay. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carries. And also, our planning director, Yuri Burnett, has a child sickness problem, so he had to go back on that, and that's more important than this one. And our treasurer went home sick this afternoon at about 10 to 5, so Greg's lonely all over there by yourself. Anyone from the audience wants to come up and sit by Greg?
It doesn't sound like our city clerk's doing too well either.
For the record, I'm here.
Well, I think our city clerk's the fault of everything. He's probably near him and breathing on him. Okay, so next up we have a, before we do the public comment period, we have a letter that we'd like to hear from our councilperson, Feria.
Thanks. Pretty brief, but I've enjoyed serving the citizens of Ferndale over the last 3.5 years, and it's been a wonderful learning experience. I've done my best to make decisions that I feel best serve the future of the current citizens of Ferndale. I haven't done everything I set out to do while I was in office, but I'm proud of the decisions I've made. I've managed to ask as many questions as possible, which I'm sure you can attest to, at the committee level to be assured that what comes forward is something that I can be supportive of. It's been a positive experience, but life's moving me on a different path. And as many of you know, my husband was offered a job in Abu Dhabi. This is my last Ferndale City Council meeting. And my resignation is effective midnight, July 31st. And I'm going to keep tabs on you guys, and I look forward to seeing what new things are accomplished in Ferndale. Thank you.
Councilperson Ingram.
I just want to say one thing, Connie. I'll be perfectly honest with you. You have been a delightful surprise.
Thank you.
I need to explain that a little bit. Okay. When you first came on the council, I thought, oh boy, here we go. But man, you just settled in and surprised the bejesus out of everybody. I think it's obvious that you study hard. It's obvious that you do your research, and it's just been a pure pleasure serving with you. I really mean that.
Councilperson Hansen.
Well, I want to echo the same thing because I remember running not for her position, but I was running with a group of people that were four people on one side and there were four people on another side. And at the time I thought, well, you wait until she gets on. She finds out she can't just hire a parks director next week. And, of course, Connie has realized that there are realities. You know, we all would like certain things, yet there are realities. And I have to echo what Paul said. You've been a delightful surprise.
Okay, I have a mayor proclamation to read, and we have some other things. But before that, you don't get off that easy. There's no way this council will ever be as attractive without you here. No
there's
doubt about that. I don't know what it's going to be like. I think every once in a while you should call me from Abu Dhabi, make sure the kids are in the background, looking for ice cream, wanting to know where the restaurant is, ordering something. You came into City Hall. I'm going to miss you coming into City Hall. It's amazing how we've seen the growth. I remember when... You know, you had the baby in the carriage, and we all kind of look, and it's like, okay, we're not getting anything done with committee meetings. Everybody's watching the baby, and we all played with the baby, and I'm going to miss that. I'm convinced, and I want you to share this at home, I'm either convinced that Isabella will win an Academy Award or she'll replace Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State. It's one of the two. Isabella's my favorite, and boy, she's going to look out word for Isabella's going to do something impressive. But you've done a great job, a wonderful job. I don't know who on the council has the ability to replace the this. So I guess we're just going to have to miss that. It always kind of kept me awake, so that's great. But, boy, great job. And we want you back. We want you to move back here someday. You always have a home here. And you just got to come back so we can see how the kids grow up. So we first of all have a mayor proclamation, whereas Councilmember Connie Ferry has served the City Council of the City of Ferndale since January 2008, and whereas Councilmember Ferry has served on various boards, commissions, and committees, including serving 3 years on the City Parks, Recreation, and Trails Advisory Board, and most recently as the chairperson for the Council Finance, Administration, Planning, and Land Use Committees, and whereas Councilmember Ferry has brought energy and enthusiasm to the council, and whereas Councilman Ferryman has unfortunately been leaving the council to bring her family to Abu Dhabi for several years. Now, therefore, I, Gary Jensen, Mayor of City of Ferndale, do hereby honor Councilman Connie Ferry for her service. Councilmember Ferry is recognized for her passionate tenure on the council, and we wish her all the best in all the future endeavors. The city hopes the Ferry family comes back to Ferndale soon. And I think that we ought to do a standing ovation. So, and we also, I mean, we have presents here.
We have presents here.
So we have
a new car!
So we have a mayor proclamation. We have a official plaque. So you can tell people, yes, I really was a council person. And... City coin.
The Empress.
This is
keep them or trade them for what's behind this door.
any comments from the public? No, it's just on Connie Perry. So we'll do the public comment later. But any comments anybody want to say from the public? Lloyd? Okay.
Well, Connie, I've enjoyed every moment of it, whether we agree or disagree. And I think the confidence and commitment that you've built here in the council, it will just carry you well in your future endeavors, especially with those kids. And I'm looking forward to remaining your Facebook friend and finding the wild adventures with sand and all the stuff that goes on in the Middle East there. So it'll be exciting to keep in touch with what's going on with the Faria clan. So, yes.
I think we should all go visit.
All the kids stories.
No. But I think we should all go visit. Okay, anyone from the public would like to speak? Chief? And I'll go back to regular comment period, but this is just for our council person.
Mr. Faria, on behalf of the police department, I wanted to tell you how grateful we are for the degree of deliberation and reflective thought you bring to your responsibilities, regardless of your position on certain public buildings. I can tell you that we are grateful that you deliberated so well and weighed the facts so evenly and thoughtfully. And the city has indeed been served well by your intelligence and your integrity, and I'm grateful to have been associated with you.
Anyone else? Welcome.
I don't have to state my name. So it's not an easy job, and we need brave people to come into the community to make difficult decisions. I want to thank you for the opportunity to watch you, deliberate, ask questions, and, of course, thank you for your service on the council. Again, not always easy decisions, and I can appreciate having to struggle with those. And I thank you.
Norbert's got the hand motions now. Did you guys see that? He's Administrator Yellen.
I'd like to add that over the years, I have worked for over 100 council members in various cities, and I honestly cannot think of many who were as good or certainly any better than you did. I've seen a lot of council members grow into the job. Sometimes it happens rather quickly. Sometimes it's rather long. But you truly came with I think, your heart in the right place and your concerns for the citizens in the right place, and you hit the ground running. It has been a pleasure. It really has.
Okay, in closing, we'll move on to the other agenda, but here's one thing I want to put a bug in your ear, and I know you've talked about it before. You have a future in politics, and when you come back, this country does need you, so I want you to come back and go into politics. And if you need somebody to work on your campaign, I think I could find a lot of people to work on your campaign. So, good luck. Okay, so next up is our public comment period. This is a time where anybody in the audience can come forward and speak to council on anything that's not on tonight's agenda. I don't have anybody signed up, but maybe that's okay. Anyone else want to come forward and speak or say anything? No, we're okay, so we'll move by that. Okay, council, I would entertain a motion to pass the consent agenda.
So moved.
Sorry.
Okay, moved and seconded. Seeing no further discussion, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Okay, motion passes unanimously. Okay, public hearing on the PUD. So I'll open the public hearing on the and do we have anyone signed up for that? No? Let me sign up for that. So do I have to read it?
Yes.
Yeah, I still have to read it. All right. Okay. Public hearing. A public hearing is a formal opportunity to give testimony to the council for consideration in their decision-making process. If you tend to speak, it's necessary to sign up, and the sign-up sheet is available at the counter. Now it's at the front table here, but you can still speak later. Written comments will also be submitted to the city clerk prior to the beginning of the hearing. When the mayor calls your name, proceed as follows. Proceed to the speaker's rostrum, microphone. Clearly state your name and address. If you're speaking as a representative for another person or organization, so state. State whether you're a proponent or opponent or neither. limit your comments to 3 minutes. After all comments are heard, if you have something to add that you have not already been stated, at the discretion of the mayor, you may be given additional 2 minutes. There will be no demonstration during inclusion of anyone's presentation. During the public testimony period of the public hearing, the council, staff, and audience remain silent. After your presentation, the council members may wish to ask you questions. After the last person has spoken, the hearing will be closed, and the council will enter a regular session. The subject of the hearing will usually appear in the agenda item for council decision or referral. The audience may not comment during the council's deliberations unless questioned by the council for clarification. These rules are intended to promote an orderly system of holding a public hearing to give every person an opportunity to be heard and ensure that no individual is embarrassed by exercising their right to free speech. So who's going to present on behalf of the city?
Ryan.
This good-looking gentleman in the audience.
Good evening,
welcome.
Council. Good evening, Mayor. As you're aware, I'm Stephanie Friori. On these two public hearings, it's really just a reworking of the existing planned unit development process that the city has. Currently, it's under Chapter 18.68. And in that chapter, they address both commercial, industrial, and residential. We're looking at separating those two, essentially. So we'll put with a new chapter, 1869, to adopt a new PUD commercial/industrial developments, and then to revise the existing PUD chapter 1868 for the residential purposes. I'm just going to go ahead and go through some of those highlights that Yori's laid out that concern the specific changes to the ordinance. You'll see starting on page one of his staff report, the intent is to, number one, create a sliding scale of open space requirements depending upon the size of the original parcel to be subdivided. Two, creating the ability to waive or reduce perimeter buffer requirements when residential PUDs are adjacent to neighborhoods of similar character. Number three, specifically allowing the use of cluster development to meet density expectations within the underlying zone. Number four, establishing a minimum density for residential PUDs. Number five, allowing the use of the residential PUD process within the urban residential zone, provided that the minimum density requirements are met. And number six, establishing language to prevent the widespread establishment of single-family residential development within multifamily zones. And then three of the intended changes for the new commercial industrial PUD, changes that vary from the existing PUD ordinance.
Excuse us for a moment.
Sure.
We're missing pages.
We're missing pages, which I didn't detect.
This 51 jumps to 53. It's a little printing. I apologize. That we didn't catch over the weekend.
We didn't hear after your second.
Boy, mine does, too.
Creating the ability to waive or reduce.
Mine goes from
buffer.
51 to 55.
Yeah. Well, on the back of 51
53.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you know,
as you started going through the points, I had the first 2 points, and I flipped over the page,
awesome.
And there weren't any more points.
You know what? All your odd numbers are missing.
Yeah.
Actually.
Are they really?
Now that you take a look at the whole section.
No, even numbers for me.
I mean, even numbers are missing. That's what I meant to say.
I mean, you got my evens, I got your odds. We got this together.
The printer didn't collate.
Right.
Yeah.
Didn't
so I did read all this over the weekend, but.
You missed every other
thing. Yeah. Do you think we should table this?
Yeah. I move to table this.
Second.
Yeah, we should bring it back next time. I don't think that would cause it. We don't have anyone who's...
Really?
It's not a pressing issue. So the printer is...
I swear we don't.
Nothing pressing.
It's nothing pressing. It's nobody's waiting on any decisions tonight for their...
I'm sure you're using
it. We should probably then... We might want to consider just continuing the public hearing until then. See if anyone tonight wants to speak to it. And if not, we can just continue.
I'd like to move to amend... Well, you can't amend the table.
Continue it.
We didn't have. Do we have a second?
But we didn't have a
vote.
We
did have a second.
We did have a second.
We did have a second. I believe.
Did have a second.
Yep.
What were you going to amend?
Who made the motion?
We're going to continue the public hearing.
Lloyd made the motion and was seconded by John.
Oh.
I believe.
Yeah. I made it. Then I think.
So if we don't, if we let it die, make a new motion.
We vote it down.
Yeah.
Or do that.
Vote it down and then we'll make a new motion.
Put a new motion.
Okay.
Well, but there's already been a motion.
Yeah, we're going to vote it down.
Right.
We can vote on it. We don't have to vote for it. No, we'll put a new motion that actually continues the public hearing and delays the decision for 2 weeks.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Just the table is deficient.
Vote down the table.
Yeah, so that was not the proper.
Okay, so everybody understand we're going to vote, but you know the direction of your vote.
Yeah.
Yes, we do. You're going to hire in a vote already, you guys.
All in favor?
Well, I mean, voting down would eliminate it.
Right.
Tabling would allow it to get it.
Yeah.
So,
all those in favor?
I'd like to ask the clerk to clarify what we need to do so that we can come back next month.
You need to vote down the tabling motion,
okay,
and then have a new motion to continue
Thank
to
you.
The next meeting.
Thank you.
Okay. All in the favor of the motion to table, signify by saying aye. All opposed?
Aye.
Aye.
Now,
a new motion.
Councilperson Hansen.
I move that we continue the public hearing and delay decision on this subject until the packets can be prepared properly.
Second.
Okay, been moved and seconded. No further discussion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Okay.
Thanks for the lessons.
Thanks anyway.
Thank you, Ryan. You did a heck of a job.
Early in the meeting.
Just for a parliamentary, there was also another simple way that could have been done. And I know we shied away from friendly amendments, but both the maker of the motion and the second, with the consent of the council, could have withdrawn their motion.
Unanimous consent, correct. Not friendly amendment.
Yeah.
No such thing.
I guess it's
just to clarify on the packet, I reviewed Director Marlega's packet to make sure that they were accurate. Hers is perfect.
I wonder if anything else is like that.
I have no idea how that happened, so I apologize.
Let's all scoot around here and read over shoulder.
By the way, I don't know if anybody's noticed, because I requested this, but the clerk numbers all the pages now from start to finish, and I find that so helpful, and that's how we discovered this. We didn't have that before, and I don't know how you do that. A little pen, you go through them, but very appreciate it.
Okay, moving on to the agenda, item D, Burt Consulting Fiscal Sustainability Contract. Administrator Young?
Yeah, this is a contract that we had brought up last time. It's been discussed in committee. In essence, the Burt Consultants will help us assess the potential cash flows from new development in the city and help us formulate strategies to enable that sort of development to occur.
It should be noted that one of the large developers that was in town last week, we explained this situation, and the developer said, well, that's a very intelligent idea.
Goes to show who you're dealing with then.
Councilperson Goodrich.
A question that I have and I've also been asked is, why do we need to do this now versus waiting 3-6 months or so until to do it? And what type of shelf life does this have as well? Because the issue of being, we don't know when a large retail may end up coming to town. And so if we do something today and that development doesn't come for 2 or 3 years, is this still viable 2 or 3 years down the road? Or do we need to wait until we get something a little more concrete and then do this thing? This is a relatively quick process compared to some of the processes that we get involved with.
Dealing with the why now question first, it's our understanding that at least one of the property owners, perhaps more than that, are interested in submitting development plans upon adoption of the plan, of the planned action ordinance. So we've been told to expect a development proposal very soon after the adoption of the planned action ordinance. So from what we understand, the interest is now, because it does take 1, 2, 3 years to actually fully build out these developments. And so they're talking about coming in rather soon. So that's part of that, the why now. The shelf life, it'll have both a short and an enduring shelf life and a very short shelf life, from the standpoint that the model that Burt comes up with, that is, how do you assess the cash inflow, your needs based on the additional development, and therefore any sort of monies that you might be able to partner, that model, that mathematical model, should be enduring. What will be fairly short is the sentiment of the council. If the council's desire is to have the best possible traffic solutions and enable large retail to come to the city under the city's, morals, so to speak, to the extent that...
Sediment or sentiment?
Sediment. From the standpoint that if we wanted big box retail at any cost, that would be one set of standards against which you could assess inflow and outflow. If you wanted logical plan development meeting the needs of your citizens, if you're at two ends of the spectrum, how bad do you want this kind of development? That sediment of the council will drive the ability of the city to say, we will partner with you a little bit, a whole bunch, or not so much. So to the extent that this council, just like it almost falls back to like a budget. One council's budget could be much different from another council's budget because the feelings of the needs of the city. So as the needs of the cities change, the acceptability of large retail and the costs and the benefits will probably change. Burke is not going to give us a model that forever will tell you when you should agree to financial contributions and at what amount. They will give us a model that we will need to constantly kind of touch back with our citizens and touch back with new council members saying, this is how a previous council felt about traffic impact fees and sales tax and how much and concurrency and level of service. How do you feel about those things? So I know that's a roundabout way to say it, but I think the need is immediate. The value is ongoing. But it's one of those things where years ago I had a professor who used to give out the questions to all of his tests. And the reason being, he says the questions don't change, but the answers do. And to the extent that the answers to the question, what do you want for Ferndale, will change over time, the output will change. But the need to ask those questions will be forever. So I think Burke will enable us to ask the right questions of ourselves to get the right answers for this point in time.
Councilor Zimmerman was first, and then Mutchler.
Well, when do we actually get to see this EIS?
It's the draft EIS is now out. It was out. It went out last Thursday. It's on our website. It's available.
We don't get a copy or.
We did not produce. It costs a little over $100 to print one out.
You got a notification that it's on the website.
But so we can give you. We do have CDs. That we've actually sent to some interested people. So we can send a CD. We did not plan on. One of the things we found out with the Pioneer Plaza, I think we had, 20, 30, 50, whatever. We had a good sized box.
It's a 300 page document. Is that what it is?
Exactly. Okay. And I think we still have half of those Pioneer Plaza EISs at back then, $80 a pop laying around. So we in today's age of electronics and realizing that much of the EIS is probably not of interest to everyone. Most people are interested in the chapter on transportation. When it talks about the population of the city, and those are kind of things that people aren't too interested in. So it's on the website. We can get you a CD, or if you want just a certain section printed out, I'm sure we could do that.
Yeah, if there's one for the city or whatever, we can check out. I just spend so much time in front of the computer, and I prefer other.
It's another 300. Plus 500, I think it's 500 pages. Yeah. It's a tome. Yeah. There's no doubt about that.
Like I said, even the breaking into sections, if you feel that some are more important than others,
right.
That's what I would see.
It all depends on your interest, yeah. Some things are certainly, it's dealt with in discrete sections. So there's one section on transportation.
I know they're expensive, but also this contract's expensive, too. So, right. It just helps us do our better job.
Councilperson Mutchler?
Thank you, Mayor Jensen. I appreciated the staff report last week. I think it was in two committees that it made sense to me. It was helpful, and I think there's huge value in this. One of the questions I asked of the gentleman from Burke last week, whatever it was, I guess it takes about 3 months for them to put this together, which in city time is not a long time. 3 months is short. And my concern is, and really probably my only concern at this point about voting in favor of this, is the idea that if it's not needed, it really isn't needed because people really aren't moving forward on a project, and when we get closer to knowing that somebody's really going to do something, and apparently somebody is, I guess, I don't know for sure, it makes sense to do this. So why can't we just wait till we really know it's needed? Because it only takes 3 months to pull it together.
Well, if a large big box retailer is going to apply for a building permit, they're not going to do that unless and until they bargain with the city over any financial contribution.
Are we at a place of bargaining with the city right now?
We had a developer that wanted to write a check last week.
They said, you know, we'll write a check with so many zeros if you just, you know, if we don't bother with
traffic.
Well,
that's the kind of stuff we need to hear, I think.
Now, and now, Greg, I'd like you to address this so the public knows, because we believe that a lot of this information formula is transferable to Slater.
Yes, yes. Yeah, that's the thing. And I mentioned we now have some developers, or at least their minions, who are interested in Slater. And this work would be transferable down there. I mean, once we make these qualitative decisions as to, you know, what our future needs are, what the cash flows are, if we are interested in participating financially with the developers for these traffic improvements, then the model that Burke comes up with is simply a mathematical model. But they need the inputs as to the sediment of the city. And right now, the sediment of the city, I believe, would probably be nearly the same as Slater, Grandview, or Main Street. I mean, the needs of the city are the needs of the city. So it is, I think, valuable because it will be transferable to other portions of the city. And to kind of mirror what the mayor said, at the meetings that we've had with the property owners, they have asked, how much is the city willing to put into this deal? And the answer has been, I don't know.
We don't know.
Because as you might expect, some of the, especially the national retailers, which is really what we're talking about, they do this every day all over the world. They have a formula. And if that formula does not pop out a certain return, they simply go to the next pin stuck in the map and say, well, how about Topeka? You know, they just move on to the next place. We are in the path of development. We do have a lot of interest. But I think we need to be smart about the other day it was explained to me, it's almost like a poker game with these developers. You know, they're not going to show us our hand. We don't want to show us, their hand. But at some point, you have to decide, you know, how much you're going to throw on the table. And we, through the Burke study, we will know how much they're going to be tossing on the table by the way of sales tax. We'll also know what they're going to be tossing on the table by the way of impacts to police, fire, parks, streets, a lot of other things. So we will have the information, at least as much information as we can, to be able to weigh whether we want to play this game and whether we are truly going to come out better at the end than we went in.
Or as the developer said, we'll know how many chips are on the table.
And as I recall from last time, Mr. Peterson said that this is money that we had set aside as our share of the $50,000. Is that correct?
Yes.
So we have the money.
Yes.
I'd like to make a motion for council to adopt Agenda Bill 1107009.
I'll second.
Okay, second. Further discussion. Councilperson Feria?
I was going to be moving in that direction anyway. That's fine.
Councilperson Ingram?
That was basically what I...
Okay. Councilperson Zimmerman?
Cool. So, Greg, how does this dovetail with our EGO program and, you know, the idea of big box stores for Grandview, Slater, and...
Right.
Where's the Eagle come in, and when does this company start working with Yuri to work along those guidelines that we've laid out as policy?
Eagle deals with the physicality of the development. That is, you know, are there bike racks? You know, is there energy efficient design? Is there skylights for passive solar? Is there a bus station? I mean, that's what Eagle deals with is the built environment. So they build these stores to sustain and hopefully enrich the community. So Eagle is what the building's going to look like and how it's going to act when people walk in the door. What we're talking about here is outside the store, when it comes to our city streets and potentially our parks and our police department, what sort of enrichment to the city are we going to get because the large big box stores have come to us? What do we value in the community? What do we need out of this deal? We know what they need. They need a store. They need the lowest development cost possible. And now we need to decide what we need so we can balance their needs against ours and hopefully come together where their needs are met and our needs are met.
But to answer maybe a question is we've had one specific store come in, and we all signed a non-disclosure to disclose that name is, so don't ask. And then they went through Eagle point by point
wanting to know, you know, if Eagle fit into what they were doing. So they did that before this process, knowing that was one of the keys of we want to know what Eagle means in terms of our store specific. Let's go through Eagle point by point so we understand what each point from Eagle meant. And then they proceeded. That was months ago.
Yeah, these large retailers, you know, again, they're very good at what they do. They eliminate all the unknowns. It's basically you know, the due diligence. You know, they come in and they know what our design standards are. They're comfortable with Eagle. They know what our market is. The last piece of the puzzle is, what are we going to require from them for traffic impacts? And are we going to financially partner with them? That's the last bit of the puzzle for them to plug all of it into their model to come out with their return on investment to either have a no-go on Ferndale, Washington.
So this current EIS, it was, in some ways, it was built on a lot of the information that Mike Cole and the Pioneer Plaza did a long time ago as far as traffic impacts. Is that what I'm kind of understanding?
Yes, but it's much more than that. As you know, the ill-fated Pioneer Plaza project was just one, albeit large, one project. And it examined what that one project would happen for the community of Ferndale. Now we have the potential for 2, 3, 4, 5 of those type of projects spread on both sides of the freeway. So while the exercise was the same, how big of a store, therefore how much traffic are you generating, and what effect is that going to have on Ferndale Streets, I-5, and the periphery out in the county, we're now talking about a much bigger scale of development on both sides of the freeway that has different impacts. You know, you put a store over where Pioneer Plaza is, and the impacts are much different than if you put a store over, say, in that empty lot behind Hagen's or something like that. You know what I'm saying? One side of the freeway. Now we're talking about development on both sides of the freeway. So it's yeah, similar process.
And I guess I'm uncomfortable because I have not gone online and read the whole traffic impact, right, what that's going to be. All I, you know, my biggest fear would be a Meridian and Telegraph Road, Bellis Fair entity. And I think that everyone in town.
That's exactly what we're trying to avoid.
Yeah, yeah. Boy, go online and read what they're proposing for Meridian, yeah, I-5. It's scary. Councilperson Goodrich, it's scary. Make sure you read it.
I know, I saw that.
It's scary.
That's the way I go to work every day now. On this proposal here, did they look at just a big box store? Because, you know, we have a potential of 1, 2, 3, 4 different developments. And then maybe another development down later in the eventually another development up at Grandview, possibly. Did they just look at, say, if a big box of X number of square feet comes, this is what you can expect? Or is it looking at all four parcels and saying, well, if all four are developed, this is what you can expect as far as the dollars and cents?
If you look at the tasks of the BURC, the first task they say is just project launch. And what that is really sitting down and meeting with us, uh-huh, to kind of talk about the scope or what have you, because they have a pretty good idea of what they want to do, but they want to refine that. Number two is the situation assessment. They review, so they take the EIS. So they're going to start off in the big picture, looking at the entire EIS. But then task three is development of policy option and evaluation criteria. That's really the key, because, again, how bad do we want this? What happens if both sides of the freeway pop? What happens if just one side or the other side? These are the policy options. What do you want to have as a policy when it comes to level of service, concurrency, financial contributions? And what's the evaluation criteria? Do we want to take the cash flow, wash off what we know are our law enforcement and EMS and parks and other costs off the top, and then deal with the remainder, or do we just want to go on a percentage of what they, you know, one store might give us $1.5-2 million, another one might only give us $500,000. Is the evaluation criteria different for different scale of development? So they will be start off with a big picture, the EIS, and then they'll hopefully help us focus on evaluation criteria. So as these developments come in one at a time, we can weigh the big picture along with the specific proposal that's in front of us.
Councilperson Ingram, and I do have a person from the audience who would like to speak.
And that's the point I'd like to make, because The only numbers that we kind of sort of know are the two big boys from Bellingham. We've heard those numbers. But the thing that I don't know and that I want to know and that this study will tell us is what about the guys that are a little bit smaller? What about the Winco? What about the targets?
Right.
We don't have those figures. And without those figures and without that study, I don't know if I could make an intelligent decision on whether to say yes or no to a development. It's just like...
Mm-hmm.
This is telling us whether all the cards are in the deck.
Another good example is in here it says that based on this raft of development potential, we need anywhere from perhaps 2 to 7 more police officers. Well, when do we need 2? When do we need 3? When do we need 4? You know, under what circumstances?
Okay, council, permission to open up. There's one comment from the audience?
Sure.
Consensus? Okay.
One person from the audience, and if anyone else wants to speak, you can.
Welcome.
Thank you. Norbert Reusche, 2147 Main Street, Ferndale. I have two questions. The first one is, do we have an estimated cost for the consulting services?
$36,000.
And my second...
$36,500.
Thank you. My second question is, sort of a general, maybe statement, pseudo question to the council. Administrator Young just a moment ago said that part of this depends on the sentiments of the council. And Brent Goodrich was asking, why do we not do this in a few months? I think what he was alluding at is that it's very possible that we'll have a new council in a few months. I wonder, wouldn't it make more sense to make this decision when the sentiments of the council can be predictable for the next 4 years? At the moment, we can't be certain what council's decision is going to be. Just sort of putting it out there, of course, for decision making. Thank you.
Thank you.
I guess if anyone wants to ask a question, we can perhaps answer. No. All right, thank you.
Anyone else from the audience? Okay, Councilperson Goodrich.
Well, instead, I'll take Mr. Rocha's comment and ask a question. If the council does change in the feeling of the council, the data that we get from this report is not going to change, or is it? Would it reflect
what you decide to do?
No, it'd be how the council would react to the data. Right.
That's what I'm saying. So the data is going to be the same no matter who's sitting up here. It's what the council does with that data that will change.
Yeah.
Okay.
Councilperson Mutchler?
Yeah, I want to respond to Mr. Rosa's comment. Council's elected to serve in a certain term of time. They really are. And we're... January is a new term. What are we in July here? We still have to do our business as well as we can, and the voters will hold us accountable for our decisions. So I think it's very proper and necessary for council members to make decisions. I really feel strongly about that.
Okay, council, any further discussion? Okay, we're looking for an approval of the Burke contract.
We had a motion in second one.
I know.
Yep. Oh, okay.
So, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Okay, motion carries with Councilor Zimmerman voting no.
Okay, next up is the department head residency requirement.
Who wants to handle that one? Administrator Young, you're over there all by yourself.
There is a... an ordinance in the packet requiring, with some exceptions, that department heads live in what has been termed the Ferndale community, which is defined in the ordinance.
Councilperson Mutchler.
Yeah, I'm going to make a motion in a moment, but I just want to add to that that it's at the end of the day, it's an ordinance that makes a strong statement, a very strong statement, that the council prefers and desires that residency of certain staff, but at the end of the day, it gives the entire control and power and of enforcement to the mayor as the city's executive. And so I'd like to make a motion so we at least can have a discussion that we approve Agenda Bill 1107-010 with an amendment to remove 3 words from the ordinance that were my mistake. They are the words on page 100. At the bottom of the page under the category called definitions, it's my mistake, and when I put in the words Point Roberts and, in my
careless thinking. I thought Point Roberts was part of our school district. It's not. So it should only say excluding Lummi Island. And I'd like to make a motion to adopt the bill with that amendment.
Just before we go, move on to second. Clerk, you're caught up?
Yeah.
Good job for a sixth guy. Okay. Second? A second?
I'll second.
Councilperson Zimmerman? Okay. Further discussion. Councilperson Metzler?
Yeah, I'd just like to say it's kind of a weird way of doing this, but what this is not, because I've enjoyed the discussion about this in committee and sometimes outside of committee, and I just like to kind of go through some things that I feel need to be said. What this is not. This is important to me, and something I think is significant. And I'm going to start by saying this does not impact any Ferndale police officers or staff. It does not impact the ability of the mayor to recruit or hire the finest staff that he can. It does not impact any current employee, whether they are senior staff, represented employees or not. Nobody has to move by ordinance or by law. The ordinance does not imply It does not imply, nor should anybody read into the proposal any criticism of any current staff at the city. None was stated, none was intended. It does not require somebody hired in the future who already lives in a nearby community, Blaine, Bellingham, or Concrete, to move if they want to commute. It does not require them to move to Ferndale. It is not merely a feel-good ordinance. It is rather a strong expression of conviction that we as a council believe that Ferndale community is a very special place, that our culture and our community matter, that relationships and interaction outside of work are vital, and that we are not just interested in hiring you to serve our city well, but to become part of this great place called Ferndale. It is not a politically motivated measure. I just want to remind, I'm the only one here not running for something, except for Connie, who I think would have, and I hope would have, she was staying here. It's not a politically motivated effort on my part. It is not a toothless ordinance, but one that expresses the will of the council, but gives the ultimate choice, and I support this, by the way, to the city's chief executive. It does not violate any state law or constitutional principle. The ordinance is not without value or won't help the city. Rather, the ordinance suggests that staff living within the community authority of Ferndale might have an edge, an insight, a perspective, perhaps an experience which may help them. And at the end of the day, living in Ferndale probably doesn't hurt anybody. So those are my points. Thank you for your time.
Councilors Goodrich, then Ferriat.
I can see some of the merits behind this, but then I look at it and think, well, gee, if you don't have to live in the city and the mayor can make the choice of the thing, what really is the purpose of it? Are we just creating another section in our book? That, to me, I don't see, there's nothing that really says, well, you got to do this. I would hope that whoever is in the position of mayor of Ferndale at any given time would look at the people he's hiring and say, you know, I'm hiring you for X. I would hope that you would come to live in our city, but I would hope that the mayor would pick the best qualified person that they could, and no matter where they lived. If the person wants to commute from Everett to here, is today's gas prices, there could be some legitimate reason. For that, I know we have people that live here in Ferndale that commute to Everett to work for Boeing. So I don't see the purpose of it, and I can't support it unless something changes here.
I have Ferriat, Zimmerman, and then back to Mutchler.
I echo some of what Councilman Goodrich said. I'm not in support of this. I don't see it as necessary. Our elected officials are required to live in the city of Ferndale. I don't think city staff should have to. And it does become just something else that's on the books. If you're saying, I'd like to live in Ferndale, but really you can just make a decision whether they have to or not anyway, then I don't really see it as having a strong point. So.
Councilperson Zimmerman?
Well, I kind of agree with certain things, because there seem to be large loopholes. Mr. Mayor, you're the chief executive. Is there anything that you disagree with on this whole thing? Because it really puts all the still power for you to make a decision of who you want to work with.
Well, and obviously John and I have had lots of discussions about this, and I'm actually kind of proud of how it was brought back.
I think John has a very, very good point, and I would hope that he would reiterate that when I go to him, is that it sends a message that we'd like to have. Mm-hmm. And on interviews, we do say, well, you know, would you consider moving to Ferndale? Would you look at Ferndale? And I think that's a message that I think it's important to put it down in print that we would like to see that. You know, and we have a trend where we have one department head, and we may have more. I think it does. I mean,
you like it.
Messages
though?
Are still important,
yeah.
And I think it's an important message. So.
As a guideline and policy for.
Yeah, I mean, and obviously what Brent says is okay. If we get a great employee and they can't move at that time, but you say, you know, someday I'd like you to. I think it's a good message. So, Councilperson Mutchler, then Goodrich, and then back to Ferriott.
Yeah, I just want to thank you, Brent, and thank you, Mayor, for those kind words about it and the intent of it. Person lives in Everett. Again, they can commute. My intent and the intent of the ordinance in a practical matter is somebody who's being hired that's from out of the area, out of the state, someplace where they're not already established where they can commute. To me, it seems to me the ordinance, the strength of the ordinance is that somebody is looking at Ferndale, they read this and go, no, they, gosh darn it, they're pretty serious about people living here, but I have a really good reason why I can't. Maybe I need to be close to a hospital, I need to be close to a school. They can explain that to the mayor, and the mayor can say, you know, that is a good reason. So I think it's the best way to make the statement that the mayor has just talked about, that, golly, we'd like you to be here, but if you have a good reason, a reasonable reason, this ordinance doesn't tie the hands around our backs. You can present that to the person who's hiring you anyway. But if this mayor or a future mayor thinks, you know, this position, you know, I really think you need to be here. This mayor may not feel that way, or he may. A future mayor may feel that way. That gives them a tool in their tool belt of hiring somebody. So I think it has some strengths in that it does send that message, but it has a lot of flexibility. It's just the mayor says, you know, you don't have to do this.
Mr. Sperry and then Goodrich.
If you feel so strongly that way, then either make it so you have to, or why not look at the other side of providing an incentive if you do?
To answer your question, I appreciate that, because it was Council Member Ingram that did not like the idea that you had to go to council to override this. You might mm-hmm. recall the original was you had to have a majority council. When he suggested that it should be the mayor, it clicked with me. I've always thought the mayor, it's his staff. Mm-hmm. He's the executive. And to me, it's like, I don't know whether Council Member Ingram supports it or not, but I thought that made it better. That made more sense to me because it doesn't violate some core principles that I believe in. One of them, it is the mayor's staff. I mean, it's the city's staff. It's the community staff, but he has to hire them.
But why not have it be an incentive if you do choose to live here? Why go about it?
This is like a negative incentive instead of a positive incentive, what you're saying.
I guess, I don't know. It's like somebody has to really fight and explain themselves for why they don't want to live in Ferndale.
Exactly. And that's what I want. I want that. I want that person to go to the mayor. Mayor, this is why I really don't think I can or should or want to live in Ferndale. I think that's a good discussion with the mayor. It's a personal, private discussion. We don't need to hear it, but I think that's a healthy discussion.
Councilperson Goodrich?
I don't know who can answer this question the best, maybe our clerk can. What is the advantage of doing this as an ordinance versus doing it as a resolution, saying we as a council would like this? You know, we've done other resolutions, like for the Gateway Pacific Terminal, saying we support that thing, versus having an actual ordinance.
The answer is that state law requires it to be an ordinance.
Why?
I don't understand. I don't know the intent of the state legislature when they approved the RCW, but the RCW specifically says that the council, if they would like to do this, shall approve it by ordinance. They give you no other option. It's a shall. It's a must.
Even though we're not.
Yeah, it might be because an ordinance would go into city code, and so it has an enduring effect. A resolution is something temporal from the standpoint that tonight at least the six of you would either approve it or disapprove it, but that doesn't have any bearing on subsequent councils. Resolutions are just points in time, while ordinances are matters of law that become incorporated into the city.
Which would make sense if you're forcing it and saying you have to live in Ferndale if you're hired, but we're giving so much of that out, you know, with leaving it up to the mayor to make a decision.
And I guess perhaps the intent of the legislature was that a residency requirement be codified into the city code through ordinance. As you said, this is not necessarily a residency requirement. It's kind of a small R requirement, if you will.
Exactly.
Okay.
Councilperson Ingram, then Hansen.
Well, I think I was the one that seconded this in committee to bring it forward to the council without recommendation. And I've got a friend who lives in Ferndale. She took a job about 5 months ago. Decent paying job, but it's south of Tacoma. And yes, she commutes every day. 5-hour commute doesn't bother her too much, evidently, but I wouldn't do it, but she says it's worth the money. And so, given the fact that basically this is looking at people coming from out of state, primarily. And it was my point in committee that if somebody's moving in here from Alaska, they've got to buy a house somewhere. We can at least ask them. We can at least say, well, gee, Ferndale's a nice place. You want to come and work here? There's nice houses.
Comes with a paycheck.
Yeah, comes with a paycheck. Yeah. So it's a little bit onerous to me because I have that part of me that says we don't have the right to tell anybody where to live, but we're not really telling them where to live. We're just asking them, consider Ferndale.
But you do that anyway.
Well, not necessarily.
You said you kind of do that anyway in your interview.
Mm-hmm. We do, but this makes it, I so agree with John that it makes it kind of where it's locked in there. Councilperson Hansen?
I know there is no intent in John's bringing this ordinance forward or it being in front of us. There's no intent to say to staff people that a residency requirement, or if the mayor asks you to be part of the community as a result of your being hired, that somehow or other that you would do a better job if you are here as opposed to living elsewhere. I know that's not here, and I know the intent's not here, but that's out there. Well, it's out there. Personally, when I moved to this community, I decided to live here. That was my personal decision. I was not asked by the school district to live here. It was my personal decision. At that time, 60% of the teachers that worked in Ferndale did not live here. It's not a lot better today. There is no residency requirement in the school district. Some of those teachers are some of the very best teachers that Ferndale has. We have some really questionable teachers who live in Ferndale. So it has absolutely nothing to do with quality of work. Yet it's still out there. And I think I'm not going to support this. John knows that. I have a problem with the message it sends. There's a second problem that I have. I don't know who is going to be mayor 10 years from now, but this will still be on the books. And it opens it up for mayoral abuse. The mayor will have the ability to say, you're going to live here. You don't have to, because you're a friend of mine. And that's there. And if it's not, if there's no ordinance, it's just not there. And I don't know that anyone that's on the current scene would use that abuse, but it's still there. It's the ability to do that is still there. If we're already doing it, which is what I hear the mayor saying, we're already asking them to consider moving into town, then why are we spinning our wheels doing something more?
Mr. Mr. Zimmerman?
Well, I disagree with you. I think that it's just a basic foundation of economic development is we give these we make our best effort to give these people good remuneration and the money that the paychecks that leads we want them to go support our schools, support our shops, all that stuff. So it's that's the basic building block of economics.
Can't make them do that good, even if they do
good jobs, you know.
This and doesn't require that.
It does. there's loopholes you can drive a truck through. That's why I don't know why you would oppose it. I think it puts the power and the judgment in favor of our executives, and I just think that it gives a good strong message that you know we got a great community, we want you to be part of it, and da da da, da and the rest is up to you to how you sell this to your new employees. So I like it.
I think it's flexible enough. It's somewhere between an ordinance and a resolution.
You ready to start requiring those who are living here to do all their shopping here too?
That's not an ordinance, but you can make an amendment.
Okay, further discussion by council. I have one person from the audience that would like to speak. Permission from the council to open for audience comments?
Sure.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
Come forward, please.
Hello again, Norbert Roycha, 2147 Main Street, Ferndale. So the city finance director is responsible for making sure that our books are balanced, that our budgets are in check, making sure that everything's hunky-dory, everything's kosher. If the city finance director, the city finance director also has the power to make recommendations to the mayor. If the city finance director makes a recommendation to the mayor, let's say proposes a new tax that we should investigate, or nay, comes out and supports a certain tax that he thinks is a good idea to make sure that our books are in check, I'd like to ask the administrator, is the city finance director currently affected by those tax increases?
He does not live in the city.
Okay. So he can propose tax increases that don't affect him but affect the community. Thank you.
I guess I would add, too, that since he's not personally affected by that or, for that matter, any financial advice, he is certainly disinterested and would offer, albeit his own, but unbiased and in his mind, unaffected advice. I think there is a certain value to the electeds making the decisions and staff bringing forward independent, unbiased, unaffected, and otherwise logical advice to the council. So in some ways, it's a double-edged sword. If someone is personally affected by a decision, large or small, in some ways, that does affect their advice, or at least it could be said that.
It should be noted that the code of ethics for a city manager recommends that he not live. He goes the other direction.
Yeah.
The code of ethics for a city manager recommends that he not live in the city.
Yeah, I'm not supposed to own any real estate in the city or have any business interest in the city because either myself or my spouse might be semi-consciously or unconsciously affected by the decisions of the advice that I give to the council.
Doesn't that create a problem with the an inherent problem with the proposal that Mr. Council Member Marshall is making? That
point of clarification: administrator or manager? You said manager.
City administrator.
Okay, I heard you say manager. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Okay. I'm going to sit down now. Does anyone have anything to say to me? Ask me.
I was just going to comment, I don't know, maybe in defense of Mark because he's not here. He has made suggestions on both sides. You know, he has made suggestions that would perhaps increase that tax, you know, like the penny gas tax or property tax. And he's also made suggestions that are giving money back to the people on reducing things, you know, or credits. So, you know, he doesn't live here, and he's made things that have swung both ways. So I think that he's doing well, whether he lives here or not. So he does
just
curious.
For us, but no questions at all. No statements. Nothing.
Thank you. Okay, council. We have a motion and a second. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Aye.
4-2.
Went
down.
2-4.
Was it 4-2?
Are you surprised?
Thank you, Council, for your time on that. I appreciate that.
Okay, capital projects. Let's go with the police station first.
The police station project is progressing. We're having biweekly construction meetings, and our project manager coordinator Michael Cole is on site on an everyday basis. As to be expected, there's small issues that arise, but by and large, we're on task and on budget, and they're proceeding right now. They're still in the additional demolition phase, because to do an addition, you naturally have to lop off the outside walls of the building, and that's really where they're happening right now. We're working on the infrastructure, predominantly the storm lines, the drain lines, all the things that you would expect that go underground before you start rising out of the dirt.
Before you go, I'll go to Councilor Zimmerman, though. There's a wrinkle that I think the council should be apprised of, the public should be apprised of, so I don't hear about it later.
Go into it now?
Yes.
The issue is to the, I guess it would be, what, to the south? Is that to the south?
Yeah, it's south. Southeast.
Southeast. Towards the house on the corner, between the existing facility and the house on the corner. As you know, the land goes out, and then it goes down a small embankment. At the foot of the embankment, there's a row of pyramidalis. And at the top of the embankment, there's some pine trees. And the addition is going to be bumping out towards the house. It's now that we're out in the ground, it's become quite obvious that once you go outside the perimeter of the building, we need to put in new storm lines as well as a new sewer line out there, and it's getting very, very tight out there. We really won't have the separation that we need. And so what we're going to be doing is putting a row of ecology blocks at the foot of that embankment, keeping the pyramidalis hedge, but eliminating those pine trees up at the very top. So if you go up there and look, there's actually a row of ecology blocks on, I guess, what would be perhaps the west side, whatever, where the new parking lot is, towards the public works yard. There's already a row of ecology blocks. We're going to be putting a new row perpendicular to it, running along the length of the pyramidalis at the foot. When they excavate for the footings for the addition, that overburden will then go down and fill partially the ecology block, and then we'll actually then slope it up. So we're just going to be kind of pushing out the hillside, if you will. It shouldn't have an adverse effect on the pyramidalis hedge that's between the facility and the home on the corner, but it does give us the ability to not only put in the utilities, perhaps more importantly, it gives us space such that in the future, 10, 20, 30 years, we can get in there on a maintenance standpoint and actually have some room to work on the side of the building.
And it also gives us another advantage, in fact, that pine trees...
Microphone.
Excuse me. Pine tree root systems can be very invasive to sewer lines. And by eliminating those pine trees, I think we'll probably save ourselves some fairly extensive maintenance costs downstream somewhere. Because I've seen enough pictures from Bo to know that, oh, man, tree roots and sewer lines just don't mix.
Mike Cole, our project manager, has gone out there with not only the engineer and the contractor, but with our chief to really verify that which trees, if all of them, and it does, in fact, that probably be the case, need to be cut down. Our crew is probably going to be cutting them down tomorrow morning.
One thing that I'd kind of like to see sometime, maybe 5 months, 6 months from now, when it gets to a point where there's actually something to see, could we get maybe an invitation to take a tour?
Yeah, that would not be a problem. The contractor, when we started off the project, they realized that this project has a lot of interest for the public, the police staff who will be occupying it, as well as the city council. And so they asked that I send out, and I did send out a notice to the city employees asking them to kind of please stay away, because this is a hard bad area. But with that said, they also talked about the idea that at certain appropriate times, they would love to arrange tours, because they're very proud of what they're going to be doing, and so that would certainly be an opportunity.
Good to hear.
As long as you get a hard hat that doesn't look like...
I'm not going to wear one that looks like great. No, I'm sorry.
Right.
I kind of look like a World War One doughboy.
Someone asked me what happened to the totem pole, and I said, no, it's in storage someplace.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Right answer.
The totem pole and the placard is in storage.
Okay, and so that's probably over by the where they put the rest of the stuff, by the where
secret,
the old...
Secret location, can't tell you.
Lummy land. Okay, and the front steps, that's what's going to be there instead?
There's going to be steps, but there's going to be kind of, for lack of a better term, an airlock atrium, if you will.
Okay.
A set of double doors. So it's going to come out, and then new stairs are actually going to come down.
Yeah. I say, there's no love affair with those pine trees. They're non-native to this part of the country anyway. So they're like shore pines or something,
exactly.
I think they were. So they're good. Maybe good for at Ocean Shores, where your old stomping grounds were. And the other thing was, what was the other thing? It was, pine trees, steps. Yeah. That's all I can think of. There's another thing, but.
Councilperson Goodrich?
I think Councilmember Zimmerman just answered my question. I wanted to know if the trees were worth saving and, and moving, but I guess if they're not, then...
I just remembered.
Okay.
Well, the people at the Reef Store, they were, always wanting to recycle. Is the big window wall that looks out toward Mount Baker, is that capable or has it already been demolished?
That's gone. It was actually recycled.
Okay, good. Yeah, good.
But that's actually, the whole wall's gone.
Yeah, good, because that shouldn't have been smashed.
Okay, any questions on the police station remodel? And you were done with that phase?
Court?
What's that?
Talk about court?
Yeah.
That's another aspect that has excited our clerk. the other day, a couple weeks ago, our probation officer, if you remember, probation was going to be moving up to that building in the area where the curvature is, and that wing, if you will. And as they started thinking more about it, the interaction between probation and court, they share the same records because they have the same clients. They were trying to figure out how they were going to be interacting, and it soon became obvious that it might be best if we actually moved Shirley, our court clerk, and Mandy, our part-time court clerk, up to that building as well, because there is room in that wing, again, if you will. There was going to be some intake offices there that we've been able to relocate within the building. So right now the plan is that not only would our probation officer, but our court clerk and assistant court clerk, all of them would be moving up to the building. And then I get to the exciting part for our clerk, which
and
means
the council.
And the council, which, well, actually, and the council, yes. Which means if you know where Shirley and Todd are when you first walk in the door there. Those offices will be available, and right now our current thought is that our clerk would move into Shirley's office, which frees up that middle office where Sam currently is, because he shares it with Mandy, our part-time court clerk, who would then be going up to the new facility. That middle area is going to become a records area, so we can actually have a centralized room for all the file cabinets. And what we're now thinking of, turning Todd's room into a floater, if you will, council office. So we'll have a desk set up there with a computer. So if any of the council members, and Councilmember Hansen will be able to attest to this, we used to have a council office, a shared office, upstairs where at the top of the stairs. So we'll be able to reinstate the concept of a shared office. If some of the council members want to come in and download information off the city's website or use the telephone or whatever it might be. So I think it's going to be good because it'll consolidate the probation and court activities up at the new facility. It will enable us to have a fairly large centralized file room. It'll get our clerk kind of out of the traveled way. It'll give the council chamber, the council members, a place to come and do some office work, and we will probably minimize the, or actually probably eliminate the court and probation individuals that come into City Hall and ask our utility clerks about their court problems. So I think it's going to take some stress out of their life. It really does seem to be kind of a win-win, and it does help us utilize that new structure even to a higher degree.
Councilperson Zimmerman?
Greg, while I'm thinking about it, you mentioned the change in the ecology blocks and that little change. Is that a change order, and if so, what does it reflect money-wise?
that's what we're currently negotiating with Curlicuccio for the cost. As I mentioned, our crew is going to come in and cut down the pine trees, so that's a cost savings. And right now, our architect is working with our structural engineer to engineer the ecology blocks. And so that's something we're just going to have to come back once they determine the structural aspects of it and the amount of fill, how much fill we could use on site. That will be a credit because right now that excavation material was going to be hauled off. Now they just need to kind of throw it over the bank. We'll probably need a little bit of extra fill, so it's going to be something we'll be coming back and determining the exact dollar amount.
I might suggest if you're cutting down the pine trees, go ahead and give all those pyramidalis a haircut. We're doing that around our place, and it's easy to cut off four or five feet.
They're not on our property. So,
oh, they're not? Okay.
Yeah, they're actually the neighbors. Yeah.
Talk with Mrs. Larson.
Yeah, so the intention right now is to leave them, but who knows? We could look at that.
Okay.
So, and some of you may not realize, but above you is completely stuffed with all the records of the city. That's what above you.
Great. Yeah, there's rows and rows and rows.
And it's almost
here.
Right above you is completely stuffed with records.
The stairs in the back.
The stairs.
Yeah, it's almost at maximum.
It's kind of a story and a half because you have to duck underneath the
beams.
It's not a great place to go get records. If you've been here, sit up, just like, where am I going now?
It's also not climate control.
Oh, wonderful.
Are there spiders?
Okay, so a police station, Main Street. Katie, welcome. We haven't seen you in a while.
I almost died up there the other day. I went to go get a record and smacked my head because the building portion is actually lower than where we keep
and
the public.
And you're not exactly tall.
No. No. I knocked myself out. I didn't make any noise.
I was saying.
So the Main Street project is pretty much physically complete. I want to thank you all again for making it to the ribbon cutting ceremony. So that was great. We really appreciate that. The Public Works Department right now is working out of basically all the final paperwork with the contractor, and we should be pretty much done. So.
Questions for Katie on Main Street?
Any surprises? That's all.
Councilperson Metzler?
I'm back to running down Main Street. I used to have to kind of weave in and out of these scary neighborhoods and come out down there, and it's very nice.
Scary.
So it was all for you.
I'll tell you later.
Scary neighborhood. Okay, any more questions to Katie? Okay.
Good job.
Do you want to do City Well Project, or are you going to go to Janice?
Yeah, I can talk about that.
Okay.
I'm dealing with a contractor that's installing the water line portion of the project, and we're starting on week four this week. The last 3 weeks, they've installed over 1,500 linear feet of pipe. That includes the bore under Main Street, which is about 210 feet. It worked really slick and had no problems with that. They've installed the pipe between, to the west side of the PD, and they are installing pipe down Douglas to Imhoff. I think probably tomorrow they've got a giant valve cluster to install there. Once that's complete, then they'll continue west down Douglas Road. Should be completed with that, I would think, either this week or next week. And then after that, then they'll be heading down Imhoff Road. So things have been going pretty well.
You might mention the closure.
There is a full roadway closure planned. We did send out notices to adjacent residents to let them know. At this point, they can't get to that part of the contract until August 8th, so it wouldn't happen prior to August 8th, so we'll continue to update the public as best we can.
Is Imhoff scheduled to be closed the whole month of August still, or is that changing, or...?
It really depends on the contractor's schedule. Basically, where that the project's broken into sections, and the lower section is when that closure can start. So the contractor is allowed a continuous four-week closure. So it really depends on when they get down to that area. They're on, if not ahead of schedule. So I would anticipate that would occur probably around the 8th of August, unless things change. So they've been making really good time.
Microphone. Well, I'm still kind of curious. They did such a slick job of underboring Main Street. Why they need to close Imhoff for a month?
Because they're coming down the side of it, not
too expensive to, you know, it'd be nice if you could.
Well, but they're going down the side of Douglas right now, and they're not closing Douglas.
Yeah, but there's a lot of stuff in it.
Right now on Douglas, they're actually able to work in the work on the shoulder. Once they get down Imhoff Road, where's the crossing? There's a point right now they're on the west side of Imhoff, the upper portion. They'll actually cross the road and have to head down within the lane of travel.
I thought they were closing just to go across Imhoff. Okay, Imhoff. Okay, now I'm the light dawns. Like they're going to go all the way down.
And the closure is just still scheduled to be an overnight thing.
Not for
Douglas, because you changed the date. I just wonder if you changed the parameters of the work.
Oh, Douglas
when you
Road?
Came to the Public Works Committee, you asked just to be closed one evening.
That was just part of the Schedule A project for the
crossing there on Douglas. And so that's still scheduled for the 27th. From 9 p.m. until 6 a.m. in the morning.
Not the 8th? 27th?
What Katie's talking about is the closure of Imhoff, and then that there is for the Schedule B, and then that there we're looking at it like a 3 to 4 week closure, whereas for that one nighttime crossing, we're just talking about the one night.
Okay. New library.
Library is progressing. We did run into a small issue. Our new civil engineers, 2020 engineering, have discovered that the original survey and civil work was off slightly by about a foot. So the entire building needs to rise 1 foot higher, which means the driveways, the stairs, the retaining walls, the ramps, everything changes because the size of the parcel still remains the same. They have corrected all of those in the drawings. They're going to be submitting. They submitted the stormwater report here just the other day, so they should be submitting for the building permit rather soon. We're currently negotiating with SHKS to determine the additional fee adjustment for all of the call it landscaping, but this isn't landscaping from a plant standpoint. This is everything outside of the building they generically call landscaping, which is more hardscaping than landscaping. So we're working with them on that, but otherwise the project continues to move forward.
And
there's no way to go back to where the error was made for, you know, once we have that cost of how much it's going to cost, there's no way to go to where the error was made and have that
it's
company
possible,
pay the difference?
It's possible.
Like legally?
But
I don't
not
know.
Probably. It's something that we're going to be looking at.
Okay. I just wanted to know that was something that could be pursued.
Whose error was it?
I just want to know that we tried.
Survey?
The original survey and the original civil work that was done. So it was the original civil engineer work that was communicated to SHKS that they used for all of the siding of the building and then all the hardscape on the exterior.
Was that from an existing survey prior to our project, or was it something that we paid for?
Something that we paid for, absolutely. If you remember, we were doing it in conjunction with the Main Street project. And the Main Street project was pretty much all designed. And so the grades of Main Street were known. But for whatever reason, that transition from the grades at Main Street to the grades of the site itself, there was a 1 foot error made.
Okay, next one is the sidewalk program. Janice?
No, on the sidewalk program, we're talking about the 2nd Avenue sidewalk. It'll go from the Boys and Girls Club to the Conical, the sports complex, and then also the sidewalk along Malloy. And those right now, we're working through the federal review and approval process on the environmental and our funding. And so hopefully we'll be moving forward on going out for bids here soon.
Councilperson Ingram.
We hope to have those both done before school starts.
Maybe I'm hoping.
Pretty pleased.
Yeah, I'm
pleased,
hoping.
Pretty pleased.
Yeah. pushing on it.
Okay. Okay, next up is the ordinance, the graffiti abatement. And Ryan, you're going to handle that?
I will give it a shot. Hopefully we get all the pages here tonight on this one.
Clarification on the pages. I caught an error from the community development director who forgot to add an ordinance onto his proposed new chapter, so I asked him to write an ordinance, and it's in your packet. It was online for the public. The pages are not numbered like that because I had already done the packet, except for that section when I found his error. So you'll notice on that section, it goes from 104 to 1.
Gotcha.
So in that specific section, his page is numbered 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay. Yeah.
So throw the guy under the bus that's not here.
Absolutely.
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 We've noted where the error was made. Thank you.
I owe him.
Just don't get near him.
Yeah, just don't get close to him.
Yeah.
Okay, Ryan. Sorry for that interruption.
That's okay. So we're looking at adopting a new chapter or code section to the Ferndale Municipal Code section, or chapter 9, section 08. To specifically address graffiti in the city of Ferndale, the new proposed chapter includes definitions of what graffiti is considered as, the different types of graffiti applying instruments, paraphernalia, as further referenced in the ordinance. It goes through those sort of enforcement of persons caught with paraphernalia of graffiti implements, how to provide restitution to property owners who owns property that's been graffitied upon and tagged. It also provides a section of use of public funds for graffiti removal, where the city becomes aware of graffiti or is notified and determines that graffiti is located on publicly or privately owned property visible from public right-of-ways in the street, that the city has a way to take care of that. And then it also provides if within 10 days the city provides notice of defacement to a property owner, that it is the property owner who is required to remove said graffiti. And that property owner may be eligible for restitution for that graffiti removal with court approval. So I guess hopefully you read through and understood the proposed ordinance. There's also another section in Chapter 9 where there's going to be an amendment made. They're going to add a sentence to the malicious mischief section. And I'll go through and read the whole section. It's a quick little paragraph. A person is guilty of malicious mischief if he or she knowingly and maliciously causes physical damage to the property of another, which can be repaired for less than $250 by a qualified person in the business of making such repairs. The insert in the new sentence is, malicious mischief shall not include acts of graffiti, vandalism, which are subject to FMC 9.08, which is the new chapter being proposed tonight. And then the final part is to add a section under the nuisance ordinance under the unhealthy or unsightly conditions, specifically section K for graffiti, which reads as follows. The existence of graffiti on public or private property as defined by Ferndale Municipal Code 9.08. A notice of defacement shall be sent to the property owner in lieu of a notice of violation as described by this chapter. The city may consider granting a hardship to those property owners who are a victim of graffiti vandalism upon the demonstration by the property that they lack the financial means to cover the removal costs. So if you have any questions, I'd like to try to answer them.
Before they go to questions, I know I have a comment from a citizen that was emailing me today. I don't know if it came tonight or not. And then our clerk would like a comment directed to you before you consider from our probation officer. Yes.
Probation Officer Todd Anderson today spoke with me because he couldn't be at the meeting. He wanted to share with you several aspects. I was in the back with the chief earlier because I hadn't had an opportunity today to speak with him about Mr. Anderson's concerns. There's a section of the ordinance, 9.08.040 on page 4, discussing community service in lieu of other penalties provided part two of that that says the entire period of community service shall be performed under the supervision of a community service provider approved by the chief of police or his designee. It also on three states, reasonable effort shall be made to assign the violator to a type of community service that is reasonably expected to have the most rehabilitative effect on the violator, such as community service that involves graffiti removal. Please understand that I'm not an expert on probation. As Mr. Anderson is, he's been doing it for 11 years. His explanation to me was that probation officers do not consider community service to necessarily have a rehabilitative effect on an offender. They consider community service to be what he termed restorative justice, to where they're providing some type of means of remuneration to whatever they've done. He didn't like the section flat out. He just would like it removed. Also, he felt like there was an unlean portion of the ordinance in that the community service provider would have to be approved by the chief of police, basically because Mr. Anderson feels like he is already the community service provider that deals with people on probation doing graffiti. Right now, the way we deal with graffiti is under malicious mischief. As Ryan explained, we're removing that. Graffiti vandalism is its own thing now, its own chapter. And so under this, with graffiti vandalism specifically, he felt like we were kind of adding on another layer that's unnecessary because the community service provider doesn't necessarily need to be chosen by the chief of police. It's the probation officer who's kind of designated directly by the court system. So that was what he wanted to comment. I don't know if the chief would like to comment elsewhere. It's up to you if you'd like to get rid of it or not. The other thing he would like to state for the record, because he thought this was important, because there is a section that discusses the private property owner needing to clean it up. We happen to have a cleanup program already in the city. That is that Todd works with our people on probation, whether or not they actually have committed a graffiti vandalism or not. It doesn't matter what their crime is. Sometimes their way to give back and to pay for their crime is to go clean up graffiti. He requires them to pay for the paint and other materials, and he works with private property owners in the area. They go clean up their graffiti, and that is their restitution. So he wanted that to be made known. He feels like sometimes the community doesn't know we have a probation department in the city, and I told him today that I'd be more than happy to provide community education on that program. Sometimes there might be a probation person who has been ordered to do that and doesn't clean it up, and that has missed some property owners who are expecting them to show up on a Saturday and paint over some graffiti. He gets another person to do it. Sometimes it just takes time. But we do have a program, so if they cannot afford it, Todd is more than happy to have someone provide that service for them. So those were the two things that he wanted shared with you.
Okay, I saw the list of hands up, and I don't know who was first, so let's go. Ready, go. Okay, Councilperson Ferrier was fast. You're first.
I just have a couple questions. One is, so what you said that Todd had to say, does that mean that there should be a replacement in here where it says community service, blah, 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 I should just say the probation officer?
I think it's just the elimination of 2 and 3.
He just wanted to
just to take them out? Okay. Secondly, if the city, so it sounds like the city wouldn't ever have to provide money to citizens with a hardship if there's a program in place, as long as there's always criminals out there that can paint over the graffiti.
We can't always guarantee that. There might not always be someone he can do that. He has many opportunities to provide certain other restitution they can do. So I wouldn't say that we can guarantee they would never.
So where would the money come from? That's maybe a question for Gary or for Greg.
What do you mean?
For public funds.
Yeah, we've just taken out of the general fund.
The general fund. Yeah. And then is there a time frame that people have to clean up their graffiti that's on? When you send them a letter that says the graffiti that's in your private, your private space that's affecting the public or however it gets worded, has to be cleaned up within?
You said within 10 days of receiving a notice of, not a violation,
okay,
but a notice
of. Okay, so sometimes
it
goes back to however long it takes for the city to then notify them, yep. I suppose, from when it happens. Okay. I'll let the other comments go ahead then, rather than making a motion because there were so many hands up.
Okay, Councilperson Ingram is next.
Well, it almost sounds to me like Todd's saying that this ordinance is not necessary.
No, not at all.
Well, I didn't hear that.
I should have. I apologize. He really likes the ordinance.
Oh, okay. Because the way I was hearing is going,
it's just
we're covering this under malicious mischief. Maybe we don't need this. And just, okay. All right.
No,
so he's in favor of it just without those.
There's a large issue right now because we do not have an ordinance on the books that sometimes it is difficult to prosecute.
To prosecute. Well, that was what I thought.
And that's why we're doing this.
So just
like this specific section.
Number
love
two.
The ordinance overall.
9.08040, number two and three, right?
Right.
Okay. I would make a motion that we approve Agenda Bill 1107-011 with the removal of Section 9.08-040, Sections 2 and 3.
Second.
Okay, moving second. I saw further discussion. I saw a hand over here.
Oh.
Okay. I have one email from a citizen, and they'd like an answer, and so I'll bring the police chief up for this one. And his question, chief, was, I'll get to you too. His concern was in working in law enforcement or being in another area that if we remove graffiti too fast without allowing police to document that graffiti, then you'd lose the chance for gang identification, which is an important layer. And I said, okay, I'll ask that question of the police chief tonight in open session.
And that's true. And we do now photograph all of the graffiti that we come upon or reported to us for identified gang tags. And then they are researched throughout the county so that we understand the migratory movements. So that generally is done in the first couple of hours once we find out about it. It's the officer responding to that call initially, takes the photographs, and this is a longer view. This is looking at the 10-day window. We're already will have discharged our responsibilities long before the intent of this ordinance, which is to provide a means of eliminating the ill effects of graffiti by painting over them. And I don't think we would need even a provision here saying do not take any sort of action yet until the police have their opportunities to photograph or whatever, because it is just normal procedure. Once the call is received, within an hour, those photographs were already taken and processed.
Okay, and so second question from a second citizen is, Mr. Mayor, please ask the police chief, what are the repercussions if we're forcing a citizen to paint over a graffiti that's gang-related, and then the gang is upset that, hey, you've just painted over what I wanted. What is the repercussion?
I can assure you that if we ever reach that stage, that will be a whole new set of problems that will far overshadow what the purpose of this ordinance is, which is to maintain our community's appearance. Hopefully we will never reach the stage where we have entrenched such gang and territorial divisions that they will take retribution against anyone who starts to eliminate their sense, their boundary. We'll never, ever reach that here in Ferndale.
Great. Okay, thank you. Council, I saw one person from the audience that would like to speak. Councilperson Goodrich, and then I'll go to the audience.
I was just looking at back here under the proper owner's responsibility graffiti removal on page 5.9.08.060, where it says the property owner shall be responsible for It shall be the responsibility of the property owner to inform the Ferndale Police Department of graffiti vandalism and ensure that photographs are provided to the city of the vandalism. Didn't that just kind of go against what the chief just said, or does that need to be changed?
This is a standard model ordinance. This comes out of the municipal research. And it may appear to be simply a redundancy, but I guess what we're trying to provide is to alert the public that we do have that responsibility to photograph and but we are not going to use this ordinance to punish them for failing to provide the photographs, but it does alert them, I think, to the idea that there is that responsibility on the part. In this case, it falls to us. That could be eliminated. It is standard verbiage. This is a boilerplate ordinance. It's the exact ordinance that's in Bellingham right today, including the provision that they have 10 days to eliminate this, or they can be maybe fined. That's the part that would, quite honestly, I would think would raise more issues by the public, suppose you're gone for 2 weeks. Could the city come in and fine you for failing to remove graffiti that you were not aware of, that you had no opportunity because you were gone? We have some graffiti here that's been for a month. And this simply allows us the leverage to enforce and voluntarily, like Bellingham, to enforce this idea that the city wants to keep its appearance at a certain level. It is not meant to be used as a bludgeon, but it has to have the teeth so that there is an understanding that we are serious and that we're going to take this matter seriously. But I don't think the section you read, it may appear redundant, and you could probably purify it by removing it. It's not something that's ever going to be an issue. Just as the 10-day period will not be an issue, this city is the type that works with its citizens and doesn't use it as a hammer.
Okay. And that brought up a question I was going to ask earlier, and I decided not to, but I will now. In the 10-day aspect of it, I didn't see anything in here, or unless I missed it when I read through it, that says if the property owner doesn't take care of it, the city will come in and do it, or are we just going to let it? I mean, yeah, I didn't go look at the other section here.
It's 050.
Yeah, I think there is a provision to do that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I just looked at that as two separate. I didn't correlate 060 going back up to 050.
They've never had one instance where they've ever had to enforce their graffiti ordinance beyond simply working with the citizen to help them remove it.
Good. Okay, Council, I'd like to go to the audience for a comment. Casing census. Comment from the audience. Welcome again.
Norbert Reich, 2147 Main Street, Ferndale. So if I understand this correctly, it's a vandal comes by and vandalizes private property. Does this ordinance or does a typical police procedure require that someone files a police report that states that there was vandalism that took place? Or at that point, once the vandalism has taken place in a private property, can someone from the city, a police officer, or perhaps Riori, for instance, because he wants to make sure that the city looks a certain way. At that point, do they go to the property owner and say, you have 10 days to remove the vandalism?
Brian?
That's what it sounds like. Yeah, it kind of works like the nuisance ordinance, which is governed by the Community Development Department. If there's notice that there's been graffiti out there, and we take the action to give that property owner notice that there is that graffiti, and they've got 10 days to comply. Otherwise, there is that section 050 that the city can use public funds to remove graffiti and go down that road, I suppose.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I guess one other question. So this is sort of hypothetical. Does someone who would want graffiti, like let's say they got a kid and walking around the streets, and the kid's a little bit of a vandal. But, you know, the parent says, you want to spray some things, you want to exercise your artistic talents, go ahead. There's the porch. Or, go ahead, there's the side of the house. I'm wondering if there's any penalties for not complying with the law. And on the other side of it, what if someone wants something that looks like vandalism or artistic graffiti? Because there's a different quality of art, of course. But is there anything in there that deals with that? I mean, I'm sure the city would be reasonable, but does the ordinance address that?
I'm talking about the property owner authorizing it.
Yeah, sure.
It's only unauthorized. I mean, if you authorize it, then that's fine.
Yeah, in the definitions, graffiti means any unauthorized inscription. So, part of the point of the ordinance was to help distinguish the difference between unauthorized vandalism versus art and First Amendment protected speech.
Fair enough. I'm just curious why I wouldn't require a police report, but I guess if somebody from the city wanted to just ask, hey, did something happen here? All right, cool. Thank you.
Thanks. Councilor Zimmerman?
Mr. Mayor, what's this going to do to Metallica?
Metallica's been gone for a while.
Oh, they're probably in jail. But
we have no authority over the bridge. The last time I thought it was a really good idea. Hey, you guys are here removing logs. If I go down to the hardware store and buy you a can of paint, can you take care of it?
Yeah.
Well, we need a work order. Okay, what if I just give you the can of paint? All right, fine. I don't know. So we don't have any authority over the railroad bridge. I have asked the railroad, can you figure out something with it? You just can't climb down there anymore, but that doesn't seem to be productive. Okay, ordinance before you. Motion and second. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed? Okay, motion carries. Okay, mayor reports. So, you got my email. It's with great sadness that we announced the resignation from the Planning Commission of Phil Petrosic. It was effective immediately when he called me last Thursday, I believe. So we'll have an opening for the Planning Commission. You can get the application online. There's been a couple suggestions. Question the clerk would like to kind of discuss in terms of advertising. Advertising is expensive. I'm going to turn over the clerk.
Council members, I would like to note, because I like your rules and regulations, to make sure we follow them. The council rules of procedure state that we have to advertise a position for an open, like an advisory body, for no less than 45 days and no more than 60 days. That's a rather long time to advertise. And could be very costly. Your council rules procedure also allow you to waive the rules should you deem it necessary. And I would just like to offer up for your consideration, and it doesn't matter one way or the other. I'm just concerned a little bit about the cost of advertising for that long if we get a significant amount of applicants pretty soon after this. The Planning Commission is generally one of the more popular. At the same time, we might not get a lot of people, and we would, no matter what, still have to advertise.
Did you say it was popular? Back up. Rewind the tape. That's a popular committee? Is that what you said? How many?
Easier to fill than the other one.
In perspective with other types of advisory bodies, I think Planning Commission is
I'm not so sure.
How's the Traffic Commission?
So,
Gary, back me up on this. Last time we had the opening, and, boy, we had just a rousing round of people.
And he lasted all long.
We had one person.
And he lasted all long.
Whereas it took us months to fill the Arts Commission as well. It took me putting an advertisement on the Lummi Nation sign to refill that committee. And it worked. And I probably would do the same for this. I would put
but do you have to pay for that one?
No, it's free.
Exactly.
Councilor
Superior? Does it specify in our rules and procedures how you have to advertise for 45 days?
In the newspaper.
That's what I thought. So I would think I would be in favor, and if you have to have it as a motion, but to have administration user discretion in some free advertising directions, if that means a sign or putting it in Facebook and seeing how that goes for, I don't know, an appropriate amount of time would be 30 days or, 14 days till the next council meeting. And then if there's no interest through those avenues to then explore advertising maybe for half the amount of time that's listed.
I also should note that from what Yori told me, the Planning Commission does not meet again until September. So we do have a good window to advertise and really seek applicants. I think the newspaper is a valuable way to seek people out, mm-hmm. but it is money. It is taxpayer money. And so I'm trying to figure out the most cost-effective way to do this. I think a newspaper advertisement would be appropriate. I just kind of was concerned about the length. I was actually surprised when I saw the 45 days requirement. I cannot think of another jurisdiction that has one that long. For instance, the Whatcom County Council has a two-week advertisement.
And maybe that's something to explore perhaps, to change anyway.
Yes. But I just wanted to note that for you guys.
Councilperson Ingram?
Well,
correct me if I'm wrong, about a year or so ago, we were going through rules and procedures. We also were going through some advertising issues, and we determined with help from municipal research that our website was a viable and acceptable place to advertise a change in public meetings. So why couldn't we use that same theory and use our website as one of our primary postings for an opening on the Planning Commission?
That is an acceptable change. You should be aware that there are certain times where we absolutely must publish in the official newspaper of record in the city of Ferndale. For instance, when we approve ordinances, we absolutely must publish the title of those ordinances in the paper of record for them to be official and made effective.
But I know the cost
of... It's a new age where we have newer opportunities to provide notice to people, having been a former reporter. I feel like there are more people not reading the legal section as there used to be. A lot of people are getting stuff online, but because I'm also a communications person, any opportunity I have to provide public information, including in the newspaper, in the legal section, I think is viable. It's just
how long do we advertise. Do you need a formal motion to suspend the rules of procedures and to make the
advertisement?
Then I would so move that we waive the rules and procedures and advertise for 14 days.
I have some other questions, but I'd like to ask the question of Senior Councilmember Hansen. Have we ever advertised anything for 45 days?
No. It's just been ignored. No, I understand. The current rules and procedures as you go through it also call for the top three candidates to be, and if the candidate number one doesn't get it, then go to candidate number two, and if he doesn't get it, number three, and then you reopen.
The mayor just brings forward.
We've never done that either. There's just some really...
Silly stuff.
Outdated. In the rules and procedures. Well intentioned. I'm not saying they were put in there for any clandestine reason. It's just that it doesn't work that way. Right now, Arts Commission or Parks Board or somebody raises their hand and said, I wouldn't mind serving. You're on. So Planning Commission is a little different than that because it is the one committee that's required by state law. Therefore, I think it does deserve a little more formalized process, but I definitely agree with the motion that 14 days is plenty. So I'll second that if it hasn't been.
It's been second. Further discussion, but I have hands up, Councilperson Goodrich and then Mutchler.
I was originally going to make the same motion that was added, but I don't know how we can do this. But as an ex-Planning Commission member, Planning Commission, it takes you several months, if not close to the first year, before you really get a feel for what's going on there. It's not something you can just jump into relatively quickly. I don't know if there's a way to put that out there to let people know. I mean, at the end of my 2 years, I was just starting to feel comfortable with it. Because, unless you're a zoning expert and a expert on our different code sections and everything like that, there is a steep learning curve to being on the Planning Commission. And there's a lot of reading up front that whoever goes on that is going to have to do. But it might be a little FYI to people so they don't realize, they realize what they're getting into as far as the work. And so I think in some respects the Planning Commission is worse than the City Council.
I think that we could absolutely, perhaps on the website, provide a rather helpful educational document explaining what the role of the Commission is and how strenuous of a task it is, how important it is to see this.
It might be nice to have a you just had a great testimonial. It might be nice to have that put Brent and have Brent give a testimonial because people are like, oh, okay.
We do a YouTube video. Hi, I'm Brent Goodrich.
Took me 2 years to figure it out. The Planning Commission has to look at, if something comes to the Planning Commission, they may look at 4, 5, 6, 7 variations, and we only see one here in council. So, there's a lot more reading and stuff that goes on in the Planning Commission to get to what comes to council.
I should note that actually legally none of you who are running for office right now or in an election year are allowed to do public service advertisements or announcements. It's against state law.
So you can't do your video?
No.
Are you sure?
It went into effect under the state legislature last year.
Wow.
So if it's a private endeavor, you can do it. But if it has to do with the public, you're not allowed.
Interesting.
They view it as additional advertisement for a campaign.
Councilperson Mutchler.
Yeah, I'm a liaison to the Planning Commission, but I've attended probably 85% of all commission meetings going 3 months before I was elected. And I agree with Brent, it's a challenging place, but it's singularly the most important committee in this community. No disrespect to the Arts Commission and everything else. It's a big deal what they do. It's huge. And I'm just stunned that more people that are concerned about land and property and all those things aren't more interested in that. And since we have someone from the press here, I'm actually speaking to Megan, I'd love to see an article or two, maybe with Yori or something, like why this committee is important. I think the education component that Brent's talking about is really important. And I'd like people to understand that they make decisions that affect everybody in this town. Because so often we as a council, I'd be curious, maybe Sam could find out. We probably approve straight away 90% of what they bring to us without much of a change. We trust their work. We respect their work. It's exceptional when we go from 32 to 35 or whatever the heck it is that's on our desk. But it tells me how important they are. And so I'd like to see the record journal or journal record or whatever we're called today. It used to be West Side Record Journal. Really lay it on. This is a big deal.
Seeing he's the only one that's not running for something, there's your spokesman.
Public service.
Probably a very good point. Councilperson Feria?
I know that the motion was made and seconded, and I was just wondering, I know that it was to change it to 14 days. Is the rest of the way the rules and procedures word that you kind of reevaluate it after the time frame? So, you know, you advertise for 14 days, and then if, you know, nobody has applied, you re-advertise for another 14 days? Is that automatically how it would work without making a change to the motion? That'd be common sense, but I'm just...
I think if we do not get applicants, we just have to re-advertise under the rules of procedure.
For that same set time that you advertised for before?
5 to 60 days.
Okay. I want to make sure that if it's 14 days we're changing it to, it's advertised for 14 days and nobody applies, that you would only be required to re-advertise it for another 14-day stretch. I didn't know if I need.
You can make a motion to
amend. Like one make
I would
a motion before you go to.
We can just bring it. Next council meeting, we'll tell you how we did.
Yeah, can you just figure that out down the line? Okay. I just kind of wanted to make sure.
It again if you'd like.
Yeah. Unless you want input into that decision,
that's what we. Yeah, right. Well, it's so important. I just didn't. You know, I know that the way that rules and procedures are, I just didn't.
I was going to offer the same thing.
You know, so. But I know the motions are moved and seconded, and there's that no friendly movement thing. I just wanted to, I don't know.
So, Customers Goodrich, you're okay to continue on based on what she said?
Yeah.
Same thing.
Okay.
Okay. Council, action?
Question.
All in favor, signify by, what we're voting to change it. Yeah, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carries.
Appreciate, Sam, you finding those things. I mean, we tease you about it, but I think it's very valuable because it saves us time down the road.
The pastor or retired pastor has guaranteed me that he would work very hard and talk to whoever comes forward and spend time with them by phone, and he's recruiting as we speak to find replacement. Councilperson Mutchler has already brought forward a suggestion. That person's wife is thinking about it.
Has he talked to you?
His wife had said, well, tell me about it first. not that she wanted to go. She just wanted to know what we were committing her husband
what he's
to
committing to.
Don't
right.
tell him.
don't have him not talk to Brett. Okay, council reports. Councilperson Feria.
As stated before, I'm leaving. And so in regards to committees, last week's committee was my last council committee, so there will need to be new council members who replace me on the committees, and I have talked to council, and I think I'd like to do it as a motion, might be the best way. I'd like to make a motion for, do you want it as three separate ones or one motion for everybody?
One motion.
Okay. I'd like to make a motion for Mel Hansen to replace me on Planning and Land Use Committee, for Steve Malpezzi to replace me on the Finance and Administration Committee, and for John Mutchler to replace me on the Police Library Ad Hoc Committee, effective at the next committee meeting.
Second. Okay, it's moved in second. Any further discussion? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, good job. Any other council reports? Councilperson Zimmerman.
Last Thursday, we had a little demonstration of the plastics into oil refinery machine, and it was, I think, pretty well attended. People from all over the county, about 25, 35 people were there, and the company was very excited, and they're saying, you know, we're looking to try to set up an American operation that's so close to Canada and everything else. So they were talking with one of the persons there who's pretty well-to-do, and who knows, that might be another little... some jobs and some industry to come.
Send them
here.
Up off the Aleutian Islands and tell them to gather up that 15-acre block of plastic bottles.
It's coming our way, they said. But no, it was well done, and I think there might be one of those in our community future some way, so I'm following up on that.
Great. Any other council reports? Councilperson Mutchler.
I have three things. One, Old Settlers is in a week and a half?
Yep.
2 weeks.
Yep.
This will be the third time I'm going to try the 5K, but there's also a 2K or 2 miles, so I'd like to encourage people to consider. It's a walk or a run, so we'll do
that's
that.
Saturday morning?
Connie, it'll be your last marathon.
I will.
Is it Saturday morning?
Saturday, yeah, it's at 9. It's earlier this year.
It's an hour earlier this year.
It is hour. And they have lots of prizes. I was stunned. I think there are more prizes than runners. I mean, they just kept handing out
everyone's
prizes.
Everyone's a winner.
I also wanted to ask council, in light of we have an open council seat beginning August 1st, I want you to know I'm personally inclined just to leave that empty until it will be filled probably around early December. But I think there should be, if perhaps that's the consensus of council, which I suspect it is, it would be nice to have some kind of statement or action so it doesn't look like we've been neglectful or we haven't thought about it. But I think that we should just let it sort of happen, not do anything, but to make it.
Not officially. It was kind of wait until I make my announcement, then you can...
Do you want to move it for discussion at committee, or do you want to make the discussion right now? We got time.
I'm fine with it now. Does anybody feel strongly that we should try to fill it for 3 months?
No.
I don't think we can do that. So I'd like to make a motion that this council is intentionally not filling this seat because it's just not fair to the citizens to have somebody in there for those 3 months.
Sorry. Okay. Further discussion?
I don't know. Everyone's already declared, and you know, I don't think we're going to put someone who's running for office in that position. So it's an opportunity for someone to sit there for a few months and look at the decisions and be part of it. And there's budgetary things, and it gives us 7 people versus you know 3 or you know 6 and even one. So I wouldn't be opposed to having someone have to take an opportunity. It'd be like being mayor for the day, you'd be councilman for 3-4 months.
Not that I'll be here, but I don't know how great of an idea it is to have somebody who hasn't been part of the process to come in and make budgetary decisions with not enough information to make those decisions on.
We all started that way.
Yeah, but just let's just pull somebody in that hasn't been coming to meetings, that doesn't really know what's going on, to sit here for 3 months and make major budgetary decisions for the city. Anyway.
Councilperson Hansen?
Well... But the learning curve for all council people, and I don't know of anybody, it'd be pretty conceited to say, if anyone wanted to say that in the first 3 months they were prepared to make some of the decisions that have to be made. I had suggested earlier that if we decided to go the direction of attempting to get someone in that position, that we should look to someone that might have been a former council person so that the learning curve was not there. I personally believe, as John has stated, that by the time we go through the rigmarole of three months, we have to advertise it. It's not one of those things where, according to our rules, by state law, all you have to do is nominate and pass somebody. But by the time we go through the procedures, we're not going to be 3 months. We're going to be 2 or 1.5. And it's not the 1st of December. It's probably the last meeting in November. It just depends on when the election.
election should be certified by the
23rd, it would not be. The 23rd would not be.
That's 14 days.
Yeah. Well, the problem is council meeting on the 21st. 23rd is the day before Thanksgiving.
Yeah. When do they serve? How many days do they serve?
Sometime.
Yeah.
So it's 18 days from the election certification.
Okay, question to the clerk, though. If the election
he
results
could know the day after the election.
Clear, could the council appoint?
They yes. could. Sure we could.
Mm-hmm.
If it was a landslide or...
Yes, you could.
Your first opportunity
you would have to waive
your 21st.
The council is able to do that.
But your first opportunity, unless you're going to hold a special meeting to do that, the first opportunity to do that would be the 21st of November. Because that's the first regular meeting after the election.
I believe that person would already come into office on November 22nd anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's election certification. So
there you go.
Councilperson,
yeah, I just want the record journal to know that this is not all political decision on my part or I think anyone on the council. I think this really serves the citizens best to not have someone come in that, you know, it really is a lot of work. You have to dispute those things. So this is, I think, a healthy, positive. It's not neglecting of our responsibilities. It's actually, I think, being very responsible to just let that thing stay empty.
Okay.
Oh, there was a motion.
There's a motion.
Second. Yeah. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Okay.
Or I might have to abstain or something.
Okay. Department.
We need to stay on the speakerphone. How do you rate that?
Department reports. Administrator.
Nothing.
Clerk.
I'm going to go use a neti pot.
Good for you. Don't come in tomorrow and breathe
in. The family.
The sinus room.
Public Works Director.
Anyway, nothing.
Cheer. No snoring.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, there he is. Police Department. Okay, well, that's it.
Mayor, I did want under council reports and everything.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, because since he's mentioning Old Settlers, you should mention maybe what everyone should do at Old Settlers.
Eat a hot dog. Yeah, but
start out with a breakfast sandwich. Yeah.
There you go.
Our entertainment person, Kim Fox, has done a fabulous job again this year.
No surprise.
If we have good weather, Friday night could be probably the biggest. Friday night as we've ever seen.
Last year was pretty big,
spectacular.
I hate to interrupt you, but it still cracks me up. Would you like to share with the audience the contracts for the band?
How much money?
No. What we're required to do.
We're required to have a 3/4-ton crew cab type vehicle that will be able to handle a huge suitcase of nothing but shoes. I mean, that's in the contract.
Is that for a special song they do?
No, you ever seen Kiss?
Big shoes, elevated shoes.
To hold all their shoes while they're there. They do a lot of costume changes?
Yeah,
but a 3/4-ton pickup, because it's a lot of weight.
A lot of shoes.
That's a lot of shoes.
Well, it's not just that. It's a crew cab to pick up the performers. There's four of them.
Okay.
Probably the, you know. Anyway, it's meaning the Old Settlers has spent a lot of money on this group. And as a result of that, this will be the first time that Old Settlers has ever charged admission. And on Friday night, there will be a $5 admission. Admission is waived. There is no admission if you have a registration ribbon. So it's a ribbon or a
big shoe.
So,
if she comes in costume with paint, I'll pay her.
Oh, you bet.
I'll pay her away.
Okay.
She'll
have a registration ribbon.
Put the Kiss logo on the bridge instead of the towel.
You will see an army of people at the gates charging admission Friday evening after the junior parade.
That's why.
It's the only event, but it's the entire park. We're not just charging admission to an area around the stage. It'll be that black fence that's the entire park will charge admission. Six and under will be free.
In case you want to bring your six-year-old to that.
Councilperson Berry.
Sorry. I won't be bringing
I'm going to keep calling on you, then maybe you'll just stay here.
I was just curious about the old settler question. I know that they weren't able to have the carnival going on this year.
Oh, yes, they did.
Okay, then. I'll answer that. They did.
They got a little verbal threat about a lawsuit.
Yeah.
Good to know.
Their mind.
I was curious what the alternative was. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my kids will be thrilled.
Councilmember Goodrich, I was curious, because by the time I called, they were sold out. Did anybody see the Bill Mosier movie?
Yes, absolutely.
And Joe.
Oh, it's phenomenal.
How was it?
It was phenomenal.
It was
packed. It was sold out.
The only thing that we wish they'd have used a few more subtitles on that one lieutenant colonel, because you could. I think it was from Australia, and you couldn't bloody understand what he was saying.
That was pretty good.
It was quite a tribute to Joe Mosier.
It was a phenomenal tribute.
Great,
tearful
moment.
Customer Zimmerman?
But no, you would put your hand up for it. No, I was just.
That's why I had my hand up.
Chief was there, and I say there's a couple technical difficulties, but it was a very, very touching moment. And I say I've known Joe when I first met him 30 years ago. Before I even met him, Harlan Hovander says he doesn't talk much. He was in the concentration camp, and then to see him just blossom from age 16, he felt
pretty
great.
It was an amazing, he was amazing
redeemed.
Councilperson Ingram.
Move to adjourn.
Second.
So rather than just voting on it, shall we do the rendition of na 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 say goodbye? All in favor, say goodbye.
Aye.
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 Na 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 na.